It's time for TWiNT This Week in Tech. We have a great panel. Alex Wilhelm is here, Stephen Kovac, Ian Thompson. We're going to talk about everything, the Apple event coming up, the big court case coming up, what's going on at Google, what's wrong with the modern investment strategy. It is a wide-ranging conversation, and I think you're going to like it. Stay tuned. Smart TWiT is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 554, recorded Sunday, March 20th, 2016. Cup of tea and biscuits. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter, user ID audible_com. And by GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients from the convenience of your computer, smartphone, or tablet. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing. For a 30-day free trial, visit GoToMeeting.com. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device. Visit Gazelle.com today. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a landing page or beautiful website for your portfolio, blog, business, online store. Enter the offer code TWIT and get 10% off Squarespace. You should. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. I look forward to this all week long because this is where I get together with the smartest people I know. We analyze the news. And frankly, I'm the consumer here. I want to know what people like Ian Thompson of the Register think about things. Welcome. Good to have you.
Always a pleasure.
And
always
he thinks it in a nice received accent. I like it. Received pronunciation, right? RP.
Yeah,
RP. You taught me that.
Yes, indeed. It's a curse, but also a blessing.
It is a blessing. It is a blessing.
And so do you get Midwesterners coming up to you and go, oh, I love your accent. It's so cute. Say something. Go away. Oh,
it's so cute, isn't it? When he says it. I love it when they get angry.
Also, wow.
Oh.
This is going to be a very interesting episode. I can kind of already tell.
Alex Wilhelm's here. That guarantees it'll be an interesting episode from, where are you from? Mattermost?
Mattermark.
So I installed some software called Mattermost, and I was like, how is it that Alex works for this company that does this it's kind of like messaging platform?
That's because I don't.
I was so close.
I'm impressed that you got the name almost right.
Matter something.
Yeah, well, you know, it matters.
Mattermark.
Mattermark.
I literally, for like a day, wondered why they hired Alex Wilhelm, because what they do is a Slack competitor, an open source Slack competitor. Right. It's actually very good. It's really cool.
Is it better than Slack?
Yeah, it's self-hosted.
Oh, really?
So you don't pay anything for it.
Well, Slack's pretty cheap for,
it adds up if you know, it's like $5 a person per month. It adds
up. Slack is so good. I feel like that's a cost I'm much willing to eat, even if I have to pay for it myself.
I know. No, I love Slack. Is Slack a sponsor today? I love Slack.
No, also, they're not. We hate it.
From techinsider.io. Is that right?
Yeah.
I got it right.
You got it right.
Finally, Steve Kovac is here. That's a division of Business Insider.
Yeah, it's our first spinoff site.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now I noticed I didn't notice this before. You have the skyline of New York on your arm.
It's actually not New York. It's a. I'm also peeling because I was. On
is it your Monopoly board? What is it?
No, it's kind of an imaginary comic booky.
It's Gotham.
City.
Come on, Gotham, admit it. Sure. It's Gotham.
Yeah. Nice thing.
Yeah, he's actually Peter Parker, and he works for. So I don't know where to begin. There's so much juicy and delicious stuff. I guess I have to start with you, Ian Thompson, and your article.
What have I done now?
You wrote the article that busted open the Microsoft caper.
Ah.
Game Developer Conference was this week, GDC. It's a great event. And, of course, Microsoft held, I think, a great panel on how to increase diversity in game developing, you know, how to get more women involved.
Yeah, it's become a regular thing, this women in gaming lunch. And then just a few hours later,
they have a party for Xbox with dancers.
Well, wearing the kind of schoolgirl uniforms I wish they wore at my school.
Schoolgirls never wore those uniforms,
no,
ever.
Exactly.
plaid skirts and brassieres, basically.
Yeah.
I think your article really galvanized a lot of criticism. I wouldn't have done the story, but you're here.
No. I mean, it's fine. It was, I mean, I can't honestly claim credit for, I mean, it was.
Were you at the event?
No, it was female developers at the event that started
tweeting.
To tweet out.
People
about
like Brianna Wu and others saying,
yeah,
what
exactly,
is going on?
Saying this is, the, you know, hang on, guys, the 1970s called and they'd like their attitudes back, please.
We haven't, I mean, this is booth babes, basically.
Pretty much.
I mean, don't see these at conferences much anymore,
it's
right?
Kind of like at the Women in Gaming lunch, if they'd had, you know, sort of Chippendales waiters, lightly oiled, serving suggestively shaped snacks to female attendees. I mean, it's that kind of level of mental disconnect.
Yeah.
And I don't know what on earth went on with the Xbox.
Well, Microsoft has apologized now.
A very swift and groveling apology, yes. Yeah. And it's...
But there was no other possible response. If they equivocated even one iota on this, they would have gone through two bad media cycles. I mean,
yeah.
they only had one option.
You know, though, it does remind me of the kind of historically boneheaded PR Xbox has had since they announced the Xbox One. This is the same company that said, well, it'll be all right unless you're in a submarine, the always on thing. I mean, so many of their PR people have blundered around Xbox.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because I think the Xbox, I'm an Xbox user. You're probably all PlayStation guys.
I'm PlayStation.
Yeah. You look like a PlayStation guy.
What about me, PlayStation to you?
Well, you're lucky because, you know, the other big story at GDC was PlayStation announced their VR.
Yes, I'm going to buy it no matter how much it costs.
Well, see, that's what's interesting to me because I also think that a lot of people bought the PlayStation 4 because it was $100 cheaper than the Xbox One. Mm-hmm. And now you're saying, I'm going to buy a $400 visor, though.
This is my easiest access to VR.
It is.
This is the only computer I own. I don't have a $1,000 gaming PC. I have a $350 PS4 that I use all the time.
Yeah.
As long as it was under $600 all in, I was going to buy whatever they announced this week. And
you're not going total Apple fanboy then. You do have an upper price limit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
This is not the iPad Pro. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
NVIDIA said, I'm trying to remember the number, that there were only something like 18 million PCs in the world that could run an Oculus Rift.
Exactly.
Tiny number out of the several hundred million. There are 38 million PlayStation 4s.
Yeah, they're going to be the early leader in the high-end VR game. What annoyed me about this announcement was they come out saying it's going to be $399. Everyone flipped out immediately, and then you dig in and realize it doesn't come with the PlayStation camera, which is necessary for the thing to actually work. So for $399, you get a non-functional VR headset unless you already bought
the PlayStation. How much is the camera?
About $50 or $60 on top of that.
It's not that much more.
No.
And does it have, you need to move controllers too, right?
Then 2 days later, they announce a bundle that's $499 that has everything you need.
Uh-huh.
So that's the real price.
That's the real price.
Listening to our customers.
Right, exactly. Right. So it's going to be $499. You get the two controllers, the camera, the headset, and a game with a bunch of demos.
How much
and
is
stuff.
The Rift? $599, right?
$599.
And the Vive is $799.
Yeah.
So you're still, even at $499, lower than anybody else.
Exactly. And plus, again,
and you're going to have more games.
Almost 40 million PlayStation 4s in the world.
Yeah.
They're just poised to totally crush it this holiday. I'm going to get one as soon as I possibly can.
You've got the interactive thing going for you as well, which we're still not sure
what's
if that's
that?
One. Well, just interactive gaming is much easier. You've got an entire community of PS4
exactly.
users who are just aching and willing to play with you.
Oh, so for multiplayer,
yeah.
It's going to be...
Which,
now, VR multiplayer is a challenge because, in fact, was it the Sony? Somebody was showing at GDC the goofiest ever multiplayer game where you're in with other people, you've got giant clown hands, and whoever it was said, I couldn't stop laughing, but it was awesome. I was giggling the whole way. I wish I could remember who that was and what was the... I'm pretty
giant
sure it was a PlayStation.
No.
Did you go to GDC?
No, this year, no.
Anybody?
No.
I skipped it.
I sent someone there, but...
Yeah, we sent somebody.
Yeah.
Which is dumb. I should have gone. It looks like it was a lot of fun.
It was all VR, and then you kind of balance that with Apple, what they're going to announce next week. A smaller phone that looks like the same one from 2.5 years ago. It's kind of
you know,
hashtag innovation.
Yeah.
We should talk about that because, we'll get to that because I do feel like that's a very good point. I mean, where is Apple's VR solution? They've hired people.
Right.
Supposedly have hundreds of people working on it.
Yeah.
I'm just really excited that if we can have a $500 kind of all-in version one of VR for your house, that means in version three it'll be like $150. So this is a pretty good starting point.
Very good place to start.
Yeah.
I mean, the first Blu-ray player was $1,000. So, you know, I mean, when you've got a new technology for $500, of course, that's because you have a pretty powerful console. Mm-hmm.
True.
Most people already have.
Yeah.
Is it going to be powerful enough?
The PS4?
Yeah.
Well, there's an extra box, and I forget what kind of gizmos are inside that extra box that you hook and
so there's
attach
additional
to. So
power.
There's a little bit of extra processing.
It's like the old RAM packs that you used
kind
to get.
Kind of, yeah. It actually looks like a mini PS4 that you hook into.
Wow.
So that helps it out a little bit.
Sony was also rumored, I don't know if they confirmed this, to be doing another PS4 that's kind of PS4.5.
Yeah. Mm. But that's normal for the console life cycle. About halfway through a console's life cycle, they release a minor hardware refresh. Yeah. So.
It's one kind reason, like the though. Intel TikTok thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You might say that VR, while Sony will have a head start, it's still not going to come into its own right away. I mean, we're going to see more powerful platforms, and consoles traditionally don't get updated very often, so they may get lapped very quickly by newer, better technology on the PC side.
Are we due for a console refresh anytime soon?
No.
Nintendo next year.
Nintendo.
Okay. Yeah.
Are they still?
Yeah, they're still around.
They've been due for a refresh for decades.
Yeah. Nintendo will have something next year. They're kind of off the cycle from Sony and Microsoft. Yeah.
But we're probably 3 years out from like the.
But wasn't it 10 years from the Xbox? At least the Xbox One. I mean, it was a lot. It's almost a decade.
Yeah.
How is that still possible? I mean, PCs improve so quickly. A decade is
a different product. It's a consumer product.
No, not anymore. I mean, Xbox is not just a Windows 10 machine with a wonky keyboard. You know.
Yeah, it's. I guess, I mean, they want to get the maximum value out of the manufacturing processes they got set up, so they don't want to change the thing too much. But, you know, the technology moves on. But you're right, if you're actually a PC gamer, then you could swap your cards out a lot more quickly.
Right.
But, yeah, they want to get, I guess, the maximum value out of their revenue chain, and then when people are really aching for it, they'll give them a new console.
I wonder if the console model itself is really that viable. Now that we have a lot of cross-platform development in the Windows community, for example, like, why do we need to have separate OS-based devices when games work across different platforms already? Like, it just strikes me as kind of an old-fashioned way to go about it. And if we're going to move fast with VR, maybe it doesn't make a lot of sense moving forward.
One of the appeals of consoles, though, is unlike a PC, there is one platform.
Right.
So you develop to one capability. It's easy for consumers. You buy the disc, nowadays you download the game, and it's going to work. You don't have to download new drivers for your DirectX. You don't have to update your video card. It just works. You know it's going
to
work.
It's very plug and play. All you need to do is take it out of the box. The kiddies get excited, plug it in, and you're ready to go.
Right.
As opposed to...
And for a developer, you know that there's 38 million PlayStation 4s with the same capability. So that's your market.
Yeah.
I think if you're developing with a PC, it's hard to even know what your market is.
Mm. Your market's like Steam.
Steam. Well, Steam helps, doesn't it?
A lot.
Steam makes a PC more like a console.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It's kind of a console inside your PC in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm.
And that's why Vive will be, I think, a very interesting play, too, as a VR thing. But in all these cases, we're talking about VR as gaming. Is that ultimately really all VR is going to be? Is it going to be augmented reality that's going to be the new UI? Or is VR going to move into that territory as well? Is VR just for gaming?
No, it can change everything, or at least it's what people are predicting. It's the final medium because it's so malleable and changeable.
It's immersive.
Whatever you want. So, I mean, imagine...
people want to be immersed in their computation?
Imagine going to a Knicks game.
Right.
And you don't actually have to go to the Garden. You just strap on the...
Well, for entertainment,
like you're there. Entertainment's great.
Productivity, is there a productivity app?
That's more AR.
Yeah.
That's
AR. Yeah. AR is for work, definitely. VR is for fun.
Yeah.
That's been my general mental... dichotomy.
Yeah.
And the real goal is to eliminate screens.
It's like a mullet?
It's the mullet of technology.
Okay.
VR in the front.
Business
or
front.
AR in the front and VR in the back.
All right, 5 points. Sounds good.
No,
I mean, the problem with VR in a business perspective is you can't see your hands. It's too immersive.
Yeah.
So you can't actually create anything. You can just absorb information.
It's about consuming.
Whereas with AR, you've actually got the ability to build into that.
What about the nausea factor? Isn't some fixed percentage of users going to get sick when they use this? I can't think of a product that's sold well that sickens its users.
Cigarettes.
And tequila.
Wait a minute.
Cigarettes
and tequila. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I take it all back.
On the entertainment front, there is a certain subset of content that exists in the world that has been at the forefront of tech innovation for online payments and video streaming.
I know where you're going.
And so I'm very curious.
We're talking performers of negotiable affection.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And I'm very curious if we... No. I'm trying to keep it family friendly.
Pwn. Performers of negotiable affection.
You might actually rue. Anyway,
yeah. We're getting censored now. Okay, cool.
Oh, no.
My only thought was, do we think that's going to be an important content varietal for VR and AR? And if so, where will it land?
I think it's going to be huge, and I think no one's going to talk about it.
They're already talking about
just like
it.
The internet. Porn is probably the number one thing people do on the internet, but no one admits that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't experienced it myself. I've seen videos of people who are doing it.
I have.
And is it as immersive? Yeah, I mean, do you get any kind of...
It's so immersive that it's scary.
Ooh. Okay.
That you're in the game. You're in it.
I didn't try. I know people who tried that demo.
Why is
CES.
It that you guys haven't tried it? It's so easy. You just download it and you put it on your helmet.
It's in Gear VR.
So to speak.
I don't own a nerd helmet yet.
No, I mean, if you don't have a Gear VR, I mean, it's easy to do. VR. And there are a number of, almost all the...
Google Cardboard has it, but I mean, apparently...
All the players are doing it. Well, the problem with the cardboard is you have to hold it with your hands. You want your hands free.
All right.
Ah, class.
Can we cut this part out? I don't know how big it'll be. That's an interesting question, because this is in general my problem with VR. Is it's a considerable additional cost. There is this issue of kind of just even getting used to it, and the potential nausea issue. My sense is that adult content like that flourishes in an environment of easy accessibility. The simpler it is, the better. Not the more expensive it is, but the easier it is. That's what's been pushing all this technology access by adding an extra device. And the extra cost and, you know, the difficulty. Besides that, you can't tell if anybody's watching you.
Yeah. Ah, the old mother leaving the cup of tea beside you while you have the headphones on thing.
Oh, has that happened to you?
No.
That's a terrible thought. No, do you still hold it home?
No. It's an old urban myth. The story has been repeated over the internet for two decades now, as far as I can check, of the person pleasuring himself with the headphones on and his eyes shut. And when he finishes, he opens his eyes and he finds a warm cup of tea and a plate of biscuits by the side of the bed, which his parents
just
have dropped off.
Thought you might need a little bit of refreshment after your
cheese and like a Red Bull.
But before I give the wrong idea about my country, I would say I don't think anyone's going to buy a VR headset just for porn.
I don't think so at all.
Okay. You know,
I think this might be the first time that it doesn't forward technology.
Yeah.
I think the point about reducing friction is really, really important in that context. I'm just curious to see where like version 3, don't laugh. Hold it on.
I am.
Where, like, version 3 of VR is when it's very cheap and just kind of pervasive. Like, the smartphone revolution really had a bigger cultural impact once we all had one.
Right.
It took a couple years, like 5, after the iPhone.
Yeah.
I wonder if the adoption curve will be faster in VR or it will be niche long term.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What, Jason?
Raymond Wong at Mashable tried on the VR porn during CES 2016.
Yeah.
And he
documented it. We have a video of him experiencing it.
Yes.
Oh, this is a great video. I've seen this.
By the way, he's doing
America
it
VR brings your
with a gold Galaxy S7.
Virtual reality. Experience your first threesome.
One of my reporters tried this same demo.
Yeah, that was my... That's exact... Oh, stop. Star. We don't want to show this. But that's exactly my reaction is, whoa. Yeah. Like, whoa. Whoa. Oh, no.
Stroking my penis.
Okay.
Whoa.
This is really not appropriate for our show.
So
we're all going like this.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
To see more, pay here at...
There's a good reason why we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, that's going to be a great use for micropayments, I feel. What we just saw.
Well, carry on going for another minute.
Exactly. First person to make a VR helmet with a quarter slot, you're saying, is going to
just keep popping them in.
Do very well.
It takes Bitcoin.
Oh, man, this went downhill. I think maybe we shouldn't do the margaritas before the show.
Yeah.
Maybe the mini show.
Oh, well, it's too late now.
We'll save them for halftime.
It's only going to get more weird over time. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we should talk about Apple because they've got an event on Monday.
Yeah.
Two events. They've got a big event on Tuesday, too. And that may be a bigger show. We've already heard a little bit about the logistics. You may have to wait in line 7.5 hours if you're lucky enough to get a ticket to the Tuesday show.
To go to court?
Yes.
Wow.
It's even harder to go to court than it is to get into the Apple event on Monday. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But first, a word from our sponsor, Audible.com. We love Audible.com. As you know, I've been a member since 2000. I had a long commute. And the only thing that saved me from true road rage was the fact that I was listening. I listened to all 21 of the Patrick O'Brien, Aubrey Matron books as I was driving. That's a lot. That's many, many, many hours. Audible has Now, the last time we checked, it says here 180,000. Last time we checked, it was almost 250,000 downloadable titles. All kinds of literature. There's fiction. There's nonfiction. There's science fiction. There's periodicals. They just acquired, and I think this is such a great acquisition, the Great Courses. So you could take college-level lectures from the best teachers in the world on subjects like relativity and medieval history. They've got the course that one of the great courses ever, How to Listen to and Understand Music. Just, I loved it. And now it's available. It can be part of your Audible subscription. We're going to give you a chance to listen to two books free. You'll be going to audible.com/twit and the number two, audible.com/twit2, and you're signing up for the Platinum account. That's two books a month, plus the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, all read to you so you can listen in the car while you're doing the dishes, while you're walking the dog. I love it in the gym. Really puts that treadmill time to good use. You're going to have a month. Pick two books. Cancel anytime in that first month. You'll pay nothing. Those books will be yours to keep. The real idea is here's a chance to see what it's like to be an Audible listener. I love it. You will love it, too. I don't even know where to start. I mean, that's kind of the first challenge is you want to listen to Harry Potter? They've got all eight books now. Free. First two books, anyway. Free. I'm listening because I'm going to go see Hamilton on Thursday. I'm going to listen to... Oh, that's the great, by the way, Jim Dale.
Perfectly normal. Thank you very much. They were the last people you'd expect to be involved in anything strange or mysterious.
He acts it out so beautifully. Although the British Audible has Stephen Fry doing it.
Oh, the classic.
Which is awesome as well. So take your pay. If you're in the UK, get the Harry Potter books there. As I said, I'm listening to the Ron Chernow biography of Hamilton, which is great. I can't wait. I'm going to be really prepared for this Broadway musical. I'm going to know the history before I go. I want you to go to audible.com/twit2. Get your two books right now and enjoy. You're going to love it. I'm telling you, audible.com/twit and the number two. Two books free right now. So, Apple's event is Monday. Anybody got an invite here? Steve is going.
I'm the only one going here.
You're the only one going here. From techinsider.io, they get invitations still. Does the register get invites?
We've been on Apple's blacklist for so many years. I think they've forgotten us, to be quite frank.
Yeah, I think I was forgotten too, I believe. That's okay because it's at one infinite loop, so it's 350 people thereabouts. It's a small theater.
It's a small auditorium, yeah.
And
a small demo area too.
There usually is a demo area. In this case, you'll probably be seeing a new smaller iPhone, a 4-inch iPhone.
Yep.
And as you point out, not exactly a cutting edge innovation.
Very similar to the one that we got 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll be interesting. One of the questions, will it have 3D touch?
It sounds like no.
That's weird because that feels like the new UI for iPhones.
Who knows? I mean, that's still up in the air, but it sounds like it's basically going to be a 6S stuffed into a 5S body.
Right. Or a 6 even. Maybe not even a 6S.
It's a 6S.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. Same processor, similar, almost the same camera.
Well, the 6S has 3D touch.
Exactly. So that might be the only exception.
Right.
Maybe they haven't cracked how to make
the 4-inch
make it work
screen.
On that screen or that body type. Or
it's not available.
Who knows? My take on this is... It's finally the cheap iPhone people have been dying for that has all
we'll
the...
We'll see how cheap, but yeah. People are guessing $450, something
yeah,
like
which
that.
Is $200 cheaper
that's
than the 6S.
That's cheap. Yeah.
So
8 gigabytes, or do you think they'll put 16,
16
storage?
But, which is also a major mistake, but...
Nobody
should buy the 16. I mean, they still...
I don't think even Apple expects anybody to buy it. I think that
not.
They have to
it's
have a
great.
Low price, and they know you're going to buy the next one.
Yeah, I mean, Apple structures it such that you have to spend $100 extra from the base model. There are a lot of people who are still hanging on to the 3.5 and 4-inch iPhones. This is a way to kind of entice them saying, hey, we stuffed all this great stuff that we've added over the years that you've been missing out on in the same form factor that you're used to and love. And it's $200 cheaper than the 6S.
Probably be a big seller.
Sounds like a lot of people, but not most people.
Apple's in this position now, and companies get to this position where they're saturated the market. So Samsung did this too, where they start trying all sorts of kind of weird sizes and shapes and just trying to find a little wedge into a newer market. So that's clearly what this is.
And iPhone sales, if you look at them, they're
1%
growth last year. They're going to decline this quarter almost certainly. So this can inject a little artificial growth right. into it by kind of forcing these people who have been hanging onto a 5 or even a 4S for 2.5, 3 or more years. They might finally feel like, okay, it's time for me to upgrade because I don't have to, I can get the device I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
I don't have to get this massive screen if I don't like it.
What was really the case is that iPhone users are not early adopters. They're not generally the cutting edge. And so this is probably a good market for Apple to tap into.
Right.
But which market is this? Is this for the U.S. market, the European market, the Asian market?
There's such cheap phones everywhere else. Mm-hmm. I don't think they can compete with a $50 phone.
No way.
So this is still aimed at kind of North America and other wealthy Western nations.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe China.
Okay.
They've been China sales initially propped up Apple.
Yeah. They even outsold Xiaomi, but now Huawei's running away with it over there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Lenovo.
Not the best prospects.
Okay, I'm not an iPhone user, and my wife likes the little iPhones because she can hold them in her hand, and she's got small hands. But the prevailing trend in the industry has been to larger and larger
Isn't
screen sizes within reason. I mean, if you go up to beyond 6 and a bit into phablet territory, then things
But I
drop
remember
off.
When people mocked me for carrying a Note, the first Note or the second Note. And it's now, it's a normal. It would be a normal size phone. It's a 5-inch phone.
And we were begging Apple for, what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Please make a big iPhone. And it spurred this mega upgrade cycle, their iPhone 6. Record
they
sales,
regretted.
They shattered records.
Yeah.
This is kind of a way to go back and court the people who didn't upgrade in that mega upgrade cycle.
Well, what I love is all the Apple fans that were like, oh, your phone's so big, ha, 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 is that a tablet? And then the iPhone 6 came out, and they all bought it immediately.
Yep.
And it's like, guys,
you know what? You know what, though? This, the nice thing about, and Steve, you've got one. Yeah. The 6S Plus, his battery life is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. But
Although,
battery life is great on that guy, too.
The new Galaxy S7. You know what's really funny is all the
well.
Android people are freaking out because there was a rumor that the next version of Android Nut Roll, I'm going to call it that until they give it a better name.
Nugget, Nut Roll.
Yeah. Nugget. Android Nut Roll. I think that everybody thinks it's going to be Nutella, but the first screenshots didn't have an app drawer.
Oh, that
And then
yeah.
the LG G5 doesn't have an app drawer.
They took it out.
And Android people are going freaking out. There's no app drawer. There's never been an app drawer.
I wish there was one.
iPhone will never have an app drawer. It barely, you have to make a folder for your junk stuff and then put it on the last page so you don't have to see it. You can't, every app is there.
Yeah, they say they're going to solve that soon. Tim Cook even said, almost 6 or 7 months ago,
you'll be
he
able
hinted,
to delete files. You
you'll
don't
be
want.
Able to delete or hide them at least. So maybe that means some sort of app drawer. But I mean, it's just silly. That's not
Apple has the resources,
feature.
And certainly they have the knowledge, the marketing clout. They know. They must know that they're a little behind.
And they also must know for every.
Do they not care?
I don't think they care.
No.
I mean, if you went back to the original iPhone, which I owned, and pulled up the main screen and held
looks
it.
Looks the same.
It looks exactly the same.
There's now, more icons.
But things, you can do a lot more stuff now. I'm not saying the phones haven't gotten better, but the core UI has really been very consistent. And I think people like that comfortability. I mean, when they took away the start bar in Windows, which no one actually used.
Right.
People lost it. And they put it back in.
Oh, this
like,
is scary. I just got a cup of tea and biscuits.
Oh my
Symbolic.
God!
And you are wearing an earpiece. Are you in VR right now?
Mom! No, but I mean, if they're going to make a radical change to the UI at that magnitude, I think they're going to do it very slowly and deliberately and get it right the first time. Because you will make people so very mad if you change their home. And smartphones are our home now.
Samsung a couple of years ago had an ad campaign implying basically the iPhone was your mom's phone.
Oh, and or the old people phone. Yeah.
The old people phone.
Is it so simple?
It wasn't so wrong, and yet it. I don't know if it worked. In fact, that was the year the S5 tanked.
Well, that whole campaign, they were even doing that before, like around the S3 and S4. That whole campaign just boosted Samsung so much. That was their best campaign ever.
Yeah.
That's why we still talk Samsung versus Apple. So whether they were correct in that assessment,
you have to look at
really
the
S7, matter.
Though, and say that in every way now that they have bested Apple. I don't see the camera.
Better
the
looking
screen,
phone, better camera.
The flexibility of having different launchers. I mean, one of the answers to people who say, well, where's the launchers? Well, just use one of many different launchers. Mm. You don't have to use the stock launcher.
I got to say, you do wonder whether Apple is starting to lose it a bit on the design front. Johnny Ive has not turned out. The smartwatch, it's okay.
Which one would you rather have or hold? This one, I mean,
let me take the case off.
It's the same size screen, but it's smaller. It
it's
fits
so
in your pocket
smaller.
Better. It's nicer to hold.
Yeah.
This and thing it, feels like I'm carrying an anvil around in my pocket.
And I have both, and I use both. But when the S7 came out, I put the iPhone 6 in a drawer because I missed the flexibility of Android, really. The Apple Watch is still a better watch than Android Wear. There's no question
definitely.
About
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's not exactly much, though. I mean, name me an Android smartwatch, which is anyone has gone, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. That would be absolutely none of them, actually.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Zero. Yeah.
We will see Apple, you know, the invite said in the loop. And, of course, it is literally in the loop, one infinite loop. But then somebody said, well, you know, they do call those bands Milanese loop. We expect a black Milanese loop, for instance. But then somebody sent me an email, which I thought was intriguing. What if we start seeing sensors in the bands? Maybe these new bands are more than just bands.
Is it someone working on, isn't Vic Mendotra working on?
Yeah, he has is it Apple Core? It's one of the first FDA approved devices for, I think it measures heart, some. I can't remember. I'll look it up.
And it's not until that the watch and other wearables will get really exciting when they can do more than just kind of track your steps and artificially track your heart rate. If they can get the resting heart rate right, if they can do respiration and all that
also,
kind of
crucially,
stuff.
If they can do it without your phone being within Bluetooth
exactly.
range.
Until
that problem
is
solved, they're all a bunch of hooey.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but also we're four of the biggest dorks on the planet and not one of us is wearing an Apple Watch right now.
So I'm wearing Android Wear of all things.
I know, that's why your wrist looks funny.
No, I think it looks like an actual watch. It's round for one thing.
Actually, that's not
it kind of looks like an actual watch from about the 1800s when they had like pocket watches on the wrists. You know what I mean?
Did you have to wind that with a spring?
Have a servant do it for you.
Oh,
you
know? Of course. Right. Of course. I would never deign to.
Yeah.
The Apple Watch is better. Oh, look, it's raining. It says so on my watch.
Have a window.
It must be true. It must be. I wanted to do an Instagram picture of raindrops on the watch telling me that it's raining.
I did a quick count up before on Friday. We have 5 smartwatches hanging around the office, completely depowered because nobody wants to wear them.
Nobody wants them.
It just, you know, we can't get rid of the things and the companies won't take them back. So yeah, what can you do?
you just leave them. But yeah. If you go back to the VR discussion we had about 20 minutes ago, we were all very excited. And then we brought up smartwatches, and then we all went, I'll have a drink.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, energy level dropped by, 50%?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That, I think, is the whole story, because we're the people who are going to buy these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if early adopters aren't excited, then you're really out of luck.
But
yeah.
We're still excited about smartphones, and that's why Apple's event tomorrow might seem a little boring, but I wrote this week. Apple is a one-trick pony, and that's smartphones, but they happen to make the best one.
Right.
Best-selling one, at least. Mm. And right now, that's the only trick that matters. And, you know, VR is cool and exciting. It's fun to see all these companies come out with it. But is it a mainstream product yet? No. It's for hardcore gamers right now.
Yeah,
right.
Does it mean Apple is totally ignoring the trend? Of course not. They have hundreds of people researching this.
Tim Cook even said, we research a lot of things, but it's not really a deal. He was talking about the car until we've hired... I can't remember what the number was, like thousands of engineers.
Right.
They can 100 engineers just means mild interest for them. They've got so much money.
Right.
And so absolutely, they've hired some of the best VR people, actually.
Yeah.
Mm. But it doesn't mean they're going to do it. It just means, we have the money. We should just...
Exactly. What do we do?
And a billion here, a billion there.
Section,
and I don't think they need to do it. Do you want to walk around with a giant headset on you right now? That's what it looks like now.
But
that's where the technology is right now.
The pressure's got to be at some point, at least internally on Apple... to find a follow-up to the iPhone.
Of course.
Mm.
And now is the time, right? Mm-hmm. And is it the iPad? No, I don't think so.
Of course
so.
That's not.
No.
And that's not even replacing the MacBook yet.
Yeah.
So
investors are very nervous about this. So if you look at Apple's stock price over the last 5 to 7 years, they've really plateaued a little bit recently because people now realize, to Steve's point, they are a one-trick pony. Mac sales, small. iPad sales, in decline. Apple Watch sales, very modest. And if iPhone goes flat... then what's
or
the,
down.
Or down.
Which,
I'm trying to be optimistic.
Yeah, okay.
What's the next upward lever? And if you say Apple TV, I will laugh at you.
It's definitely not TV, and it's not cars either. Can they sell a $70,000 car
I think the whole Apple car thing is a huge, you know, sort of red herring. I think, coming to your point, they've got a real problem. Unless they can get their iPhone mojo back, then Chinese manufacturers doing cheap phones which look good enough are going to eat their lunch. Completely.
Well, that's been the story for years, and that hasn't happened yet. And
well, the one we're watching right now, of course, the Xiaomi.
Yeah.
The Mi 5 or 4? The new Mi 5, which is very
supposed to be good, yeah.
It's an Snapdragon 820. It's a very credible phone, $250.
That's really cheap.
Yeah.
Unlocked. And now they've never sold these in the U.S., but there is considerable thought that this may be the one.
Yeah.
Where they introduced it in the U.S.
We've been waiting for it, to be honest.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
I've tried some of their phones out. I'm really impressed with them. They've got some great software on them. whether or not they're not going to beat Apple immediately in the in any anything like a premium market because they are cheap. But if it's a choice between spending half the price on a phone, which is 95% as good, I don't know that, you know, iOS and macOS is going to have enough to hold them there. And you're right, we have been saying this for years, but it's growing slowly but surely.
3,000 milliamp hour battery, 4 gigs of RAM, 60 megapixel camera, 5-inch screen, 1920 screen.
It's not like you need a lot more than that.
Snapdragon 820. And at that price, I have to think that this is the biggest market in the U.S. Is there's the premium market, which we all participate in, so we're a little bit in a bubble. But most people don't want to spend $800 for this phone. That's more than their computer costs.
Yeah, but they don't see it that way. They see now the carriers are starting it such that you pay $30 a month. Yeah. It's like leasing your phone.
I think people are starting to get these are not subsidized anymore. They're starting to get what they're paying. And I think that's one of the reasons something like a Xiaomi 5 might have an opportunity.
At $250 a pop, if you dropped it and broke the screen, you could just buy a new one.
Yeah.
And by the way, I already have broken my S7.
Mine looks like that
this
too.
This thing is like slippery, like a little fishy in your hand. And breaks.
I didn't do anything to mine.
Trivially,
and
easily.
I have a crack on the bottom of mine, just like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone I know who has this S7 has it, is cracked.
It's bad.
But I put it in a case, and you'll never see it. I hope, as long as I don't crack the front. All right. They're also going to announce a new iPad. We're pretty sure an iPad Pro 10-inch version. Again, this is very much like nibbling around at the corners, trying to find a new market for something that is not growing. It's not going to.
The iPad still hasn't convinced me, especially the Pro. I mean, it was, you know, the keyboard that came with it was terrible.
Yes.
It was awful to type on. The letters actually fade off of it when you type on it too much. And they're claiming it replaces. And they claim it replaces your laptop.
No one knows that because no one's typed on it enough to know that the letters fade.
You know, I think if you're going to get it, we've learned now that iPads have a shelf or a you hold on to an iPad for, what, 3, 4, 5 years
before
you're ready to update it. And you give it to the kids, and they watch Netflix or YouTube on it.
Now,
This is not going to inject more excitement to the iPad.
Apple moved this event a week ahead. Mm-hmm. I've got to think because they wanted to be the day before the court.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Which
is
means,
very cheeky, by the way. Very cheeky indeed.
Oh, they're cheeky all around.
I love it.
Don't you think that Tim Cook doing an open letter on the Apple webpage saying there needs to be discussion about this. That's cheeky as hell.
Oh, yeah. Tim Cook just stopped caring.
In the face of a federal court order we're not going to go. We're not going to do it.
The FBI was cheeky as hell by the same
standard. Well, everybody's cheeky.
Because the San Bernardino case was picked specifically because it's a terrorism case. Well, the suspect's dead anyway.
It's very clear
he's not gonna kick,
what they're really looking for is
what they're
precedent.
Looking for is case law. Yeah. And they set Apple up a beauty, and Apple turned around and fought them. I say good luck to them.
No, I'm glad Tim Cook did that, and it turned out to be the right strategy because it's not just us, but I think that in general, the American populace is aware of this issue.
Yes,
is aware of privacy and encryption. It may be a little bit of theater. I expect that Tim Cook will begin the event with a little 10-minute making the case. It'll be his closing argument, in effect, making the case, which he's preparing as we speak, for why we don't want the FBI to have access to these phones. But I think the whole thing is theater from both sides.
Oh, yeah.
Because we really live in a surveillance society.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is what the FBI... I was talking to a lot of guys at RSA about this, and the feeling was pretty much universal in that up until we started getting full encryption on iPhones and the same with Android phones and Snowden started leaking
this
about
was all from
what was
Snowden.
Going on.
You can blame Snowden for all of this, right?
I mean, up until then, if you said, oh, well, the government is collecting dossiers on everyone's internet habits, you would have been laughed out the room as a tinfoil hat-wearing nut job. Then when the stuff came out, it was just like, ah, well, maybe they are, but I'm sure it's all very safe. Apple and Google responded perfectly well to what is a customer demand for secure communications. And the FBI panicked when they realized all this lovely stuff, which means we can just sit in an office and scan stuff rather than going out and doing police work.
Neil Stevenson says relying on encryption is like a guy living in a house with a picket fence that consists of a single picket a mile high. That encryption, yes, does work, but there are so many ways that you can never eliminate the human factor.
Encryption doesn't work on a rooted computer.
It doesn't work in general, really. And and law enforcement has many means, which they know very well, to get around all of this. How did they get Silk Road? Bitcoin's encrypted. Well, informants. It's mm-hmm. easy.
And that's how Apple's argument is as well.
But I think Apple's a little yeah. disingenuous, too, because I think from the marketing point of view, it's great to tout their phones as being secure. But there is no security. They're giving up the iCloud backups routinely.
But they also said that out loud. They draw the line at the device.
Yes.
And so
they're quite proper, too, because they yeah. don't want to write firmware.
Exactly.
And, in fact, the latest story is that the programmers at Apple probably would walk out yeah. if yeah. they were
them.
Asked to do that.
And they'll yeah. get hired in 2 seconds and from anywhere
and
else.
And I don't really, they could walk down the street to any other company yeah. in Silicon Valley.
Do they yeah. face a contempt of court if they walk out? No, they're just quitting their job.
Right.
I don't think legally, we've been trying to find a lawyer who can give us a straight answer on this, but legally, there's really nothing the FBI can do if they say, well, if you're going to force me to do this, I quit. You can't force somebody to provide their labor for an assigned position. So,
Susan Crawford wrote a really interesting piece. She is an expert in this kind of law. I'm trying to remember her title. Let me find it for you. It's on Medium. She's professor at Harvard Law. Oh, she might know about law then. Back Channel's tech policy columnist. Back Channel is Stephen Levy's Medium channel for tech writing. In yeah. 2009, she served as Barack Obama's special assistant for science, technology, and innovation policy. The law is clear, she writes. The FBI cannot make Apple rewrite its OS because CALEA specifically forbids it. She says, every once in a while, President Obama removes his law professor in chief hat and puts on his I get terrifying briefings every day hat. She said, yeah, he said what he said, but he must know, as a constitutional lawyer by training, that when CALEA, the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, was passed by Congress 20 years ago, it made it very clear the government cannot, may not, in it is says specifically, tell manufacturers how to design or configure a phone or software used by that phone, including security software used by that phone.
How's this not been brought up by Apple? That's what I want to know.
They did bring it up their last court filing because I did a story about it. When the CALEA hearings were first done in 1994, then they had big congressional committees, and they got the then director of the FBI who said, yes, of course, we're not going to force companies to decrypt. We'll just take the signals and we'll work it out ourselves. Thanks very much. And now,
just let us wiretap. That's all we ask.
Yeah. And now Director Comey is turning around and saying, actually, no, you know, we haven't properly asked the NSA whether they can uncap the chips or anything like that. But if you could just do it for us, that would be great. Using a law that was written in 1789.
This the All Writs Act. And that's what she says. This because they can't use CALEA, they're going to the All Writs Act. Mm. But she says this was part of the negotiation. This was the tit for tat. Yeah. Congress said, okay, you've got to help them with wiretapping. But in exchange, Section 1002, the feds gave up authority to, quote, require any specific design of equipment, facilities, services, features, or system configurations from any phone manufacturer. That's directly.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question. And I'm surprised Sherry Pym, the judge in this federal case, didn't know this. And by now, she must know this. She can't. This is going to be the surprise on Tuesday. She can't rule this because it's direct contravention of what Congress clearly mandated. I am amazed that Apple just didn't give her this sentence and say, Your Honor, case closed.
Yeah, I mean, also, Apple is an information services provider rather than telecommunications provider. So the full CALEA laws don't even act on the company.
Phone manufacturer, yeah, they are.
Then they're mentioned.
They are. That's the one place CALEA does apply to.
Which
Apple.
Explains why they went for the All Writs Act approach. This has just been, I can't help feeling, a botched job on behalf of the FBI and also a slightly botched job on behalf of Apple. Because they came out saying, we're not going to put a backdoor on encryption. And when you look at that specific case, that's not what the FBI were asking for. They were asking for a way around brute forcing.
Right.
But it's clear that they've decided to go all in on this. And
well, Apple's argument is the brute force is only made possible by
firmware.
Yeah. 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 Yeah,
exactly.
Which may not be true.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, what's the All Writs Act?
Oh, everybody knows that by now.
Oh, sorry.
1789. But
1789,
you know what?
Yeah.
It's a mistake to really focus on that because the All Writs Act very simply says a judge can do whatever the judge needs to do to get the job
done. It's a two-sentence act saying that when the government issues a writ, you've got to obey it unless certain circumstances come in.
Right.
And the FBI has decided to use this to say...
It's a flimsy justification.
Yeah, the FBI has decided to use this saying, well, we're telling you to do it, so do it.
Right.
And... It's
why that holds water is beyond me. But this has been around for a long time for exactly this purpose.
Yeah.
So what's changed is that this is going to be a little more theater on Tuesday because before it was just the two lawyers arguing and the judge ruling. The Department of Justice has asked for witnesses and testimony. Now, I'm no legal eagle, but I was told that that means they think they have a weak case.
That means Apple thinks the FBI has a weak case. Yeah.
But it was the DOJ that asked for the witnesses, right?
Right. But the witnesses they're calling, they're not calling Tim Cook. They're calling Apple's cryptographer.
Well,
and
yeah, some good
else.
People. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's going to be a really wonky hearing, I have a feeling, and get really deep into the nitty-gritty of what...
I don't know how it works over here, but by the same corollary, if they're asking for witnesses from Apple, Apple can then presumably ask for witnesses from the DOJ, because the one argument they've been saying is, we don't know how to do this, it's up to you to work out how to do it so that we can decrypt messages when we want it. So if they can't find a single government representative who can give a reasonable scheme where
there will be
happen,
witnesses on both sides.
I mean,
that's
so.
In that
case, they could have just completely.
This was revealed in a conference call Apple held on Friday. That on Wednesday, the judge, the Apple lawyers, and the lawyers for the Department of Justice had a conference call, and the FBI requested an evidentiary hearing. This is something that's within their rights to ask for. Apple's providing two employees. One is Eric Neuenschwander, who I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. Neuenschwander is Apple's chief product security and privacy manager. In other words, their encryption guru.
Yeah, he's already given a court declaration on this as well, yep. Which is quite clear. This is utter bollocks and not going to fly.
And Lisa Ollie, who's their global law enforcement manager. Apple has to have a global law enforcement manager to manage law enforcement requests. Yeah. So that's a full-time job. The FBI will also have two witnesses. And so the hearings begin at 1 o'clock Pacific time, but the judge has warned they'll be handing out tickets. It's a small courtroom. There'll be an overflow room. The courtroom, I think, is 35 people, half of whom will be Apple and DOJ employees. And then there's a 350-seat overflow theater. And you'll have to get tickets. Tickets will be issued at 7 in the morning on Tuesday.
Oh, no, that's so early.
And, well, you need to be there early because they can only get, they say, 10 people an hour through the security. Or is it 30 people?
It's 30
people. 30 people. It's slow. I've been through courtroom security. Yeah. They really go through it. And so they say an estimated 7.5 hours to get everybody into the courtroom. So it's going to be tight.
So bring lunch if you're going.
Right. They also said that. There's no food. There's a snack machine. Bring lunch. It's going to be very
I'm so glad I don't hang out with the legal system very often.
I know.
They don't party very well. This is not...
No margaritas.
They always end at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. I'll take that.
Yeah, it's a short day. This... I don't... They're not going to... I wish they would broadcast this.
Oh, I know.
This would rival the OJ.
Yeah, it would be... Well,
Tech Geeks would rival the
OJ. Yeah,
I don't think
say,
it's going to grip the nation quite the way OJ did.
I believe the nation is gripped.
But I mean, definitely people are concerned
about it. I think they're really interested in this. And by the way, a lot more interesting than following the political situation. There's a lot of what's going on in Syria. There's a lot of stuff that's not as much fun. I do think this is just massive theater and that both sides really know that law enforcement gets plenty of information from all sorts of sources.
Yeah.
They are not going dark. There was a Harvard Berkman.
Hey, Prism is still going. For
Prism's
sake,
going. Echelon's going. They know a lot about what's going on. Furthermore, Apple cooperates with the government quite routinely.
Yep.
I don't.
They cooperated on this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't
it was
blame
only
them.
When the FBI decided, actually, we're going to go public with this one.
And they said, no, don't say this out loud. It's a secret.
Exactly.
But I think both parties, to some degree, deserve a little approbation.
There is a shame on both your houses.
There's a shame on both your houses.
Yeah.
But what I have enjoyed a lot about the broader talk of encryption and privacy is that it's brought out people who don't know anything about security and given them a platform to say very foolish things in public, which has been enjoyable to
watch.
It
has been funny to watch.
Because they're like, I want a magic pony. And we're like, no, you can't have a magic pony.
This does shake
That's what
out.
Obama wants. Obama wants the magic pony.
There's got to be a magic pony.
If the nerds would only nerd a little bit harder, they can make us a magic pony.
Right.
That
and
South by Southwest talk was shaming.
It was incredibly sad. I
can't comment on this case specifically, but here's a theoretical scenario that can easily apply to this case.
And calling your audience fetishists because they like their privacy, you know,
it's such a shame because he came to South by Southwest to do a good thing, which was to get the tech community to support transparent government, efficient government.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then he gets asked that question and he throws it all away.
Yeah. But he must have been known. He must have known the question was coming, and that must have been the considered response they had to that.
Who's
if that's
preparing
the best
him?
They've got.
I mean, if his tech, exactly. If his tech team is telling him that, they're not doing a good job advising him.
No.
Which means that we have a problem from all levels of government on this issue.
Yeah.
Math works.
Yes.
You can't break math. So either we have encryption or we don't. You can't just have this awkward middle ground because someone else told you you could. Magic ponies don't exist.
Maybe we can look a little deeper.
Okay.
I think this – I think – and I don't know where what we're going to find if we dig deeper. But we've got to assume that all parties in this are intelligent, not the congressman. But
the law enforcement.
The law enforcement's intelligent. Apple's intelligent. The president is for sure intelligent. I suspect there is a deeper – longer game being played here, and I can't quite figure out what it is, but I do feel like it's a that was a dumb thing for the president to say, and I think he knows better than to do that unless there's more than meets the eye here. What is the long game? What would the government really like? I think the here's one thing, and by the way, I'm going to credit Bruce Sterling. You got to listen to his keynote at the end. He's done it for 30 years now at the end of South by Southwest, and he is brilliant. And he is acerbic, and he is totally cynical. But he says, forget it. The four horsemen of the – five horsemen of the internet, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google have created a commercial surveillance society. They know everything. Law enforcement has created a law enforcement surveillance society. They know everything. There's no dark. What they would like you to think is there's some dark – but in fact, there isn't. And so a lot of this, he believes, is hand-waving from both parties to say, pay no attention to the real matter at hand, which is we know everything you're doing. And it's only getting better as you continue to put Internet of Things devices in your house. Yeah. I asked my radio audience today, look around you. How many microphones and cameras are around you right now? Look here. Every one of our computers has a camera. Every one of our phones has a camera. They all have microphones. Your Echo, your television set, and we're adding more and more all the time, all of which is accessible by bad guys, good guys, and commercial interests.
But at a minimum,
I think what they want us to do is just forget about that. Pay it. Look, no, we can make your phone private. They want to have that conversation because they don't want us to think beyond it.
But if you don't have strong encryption, you couldn't even have the theoretical option of privacy.
Yeah.
And that's why
that it's highly theoretical. That's that mile high picket fence.
But at a minimum,
there's a million other ways around.
I still have hope.
Yeah.
I still have hope for privacy. I still I think that if we as the technology community work on these new things, IoT, VR even.
Yeah.
And we do it properly and we build it correctly and with good walls and defense, we could still have at least a modicum of privacy.
The people who end up protecting their privacy look like kooks. They've got tape over their cameras. They carry feature phones, not smartphones, and they look like they're tin hat crazies, when in fact, that's what you have to do if you want to be private.
It's quite extreme. And we're not going to do that, us here.
No one's going to do that.
No. But again, if we don't have encryption, you can't have that for anybody.
No, exactly.
And so we need to have CyberSec reporters that are secure.
But that's kind of the point, is that Ted Kaczynski benefits from encryption. Nobody else does.
Well, I like it.
I use it, but are you? But really, come on.
Oh, I'm not very.
I use it casually. Yeah. You use it casually.
But look, at the end of the day, if anybody wanted to get onto any unwell computers, they could do it
easily,
just by breaking into the house and installing stuff on there. Precisely. Anyway, but you've got to have that baseline. You can't have them saying you don't have the right to secure communications, because once you've given up that battle, that's it. Everything else is just. I mean, you could argue we've already lost it all anyway, but. I'd like to have that little bulwark in there.
I agree. And this is what law enforcement and commercial interests want you to say. They say, yes, yes, you have encryption. We're going to fight over it. And then you're going to win and you're going to feel good because you have encryption. Meanwhile, everybody who wants to know what you're up to, which includes commercial interests and government interests, knows exactly what you're up to.
Okay. We were having
pay no attention. We got encryption, though. We won. We will win this battle. And we will all go home fat and happy. And they will be happy because, in fact, there was never any chance of us winning.
Leo, I've never said this before, but that's a little bit too cynical, I think.
Alex Wilhelm,
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm so proud of myself right now.
But do you not think that's the case?
I think it's mostly the case, but I think if we can win this particular battle, we can move the weight of gravity more towards our direction and the direction of privacy. I'm at least going to operate under that assumption because I think it still matters. So if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But
I think it matters.
Okay. I'll go down with this.
I think it matters, but I think that we have lost the ability to choose that long ago because of Google, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook on the one hand, NSA, which, by the way, NSA is now giving its information to domestic law enforcement.
Yeah.
Alex, how can you look at that and say, oh, yeah, well, there's still hope? There's no freaking hope. Are you nuts?
We need to know the
I hope I'm not nuts. That would be terrible. That would make my life a lot harder, I feel. I probably couldn't even do my job. But, I mean, the commercial interests are opt-in. I use Gmail. They send ads against my email. I don't have an ability to opt out of the NSA aside from strong.
When's the last time your internet service provider asked you to opt in or out of privacy?
Well, the FCC's working on that right now, actually.
Yeah,
so
but,
Tom Wheeler's a great guy.
But, yeah, Tom Wheeler's a great guy. Yeah. Okay, right there, the fact that we are now, and I agree with you, saying Tom Wheeler's a great guy means how hopeless it is.
All right, well, in that case, we can just wrap this up.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no real point.
We should go into the future knowing.
Can I make it now, or do I have to wait till we turn off the cameras?
No, I mean, it's... Tom Wheeler surprised all of us.
He did.
Because the guy was,
we thought he was
chief
a,
lobbyist
a
for
dingo,
the cable
right?
industry, chief lobbyist for the telco industry.
In the Hall of Fame for both industries.
He then almost, when he published that initial net neutrality thing, he just like, oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Here we go. Bend over. It's coming. And then he was like, actually, no. And then the industry got a little bit of hope on this.
Yeah.
But with this and with the encryption thing, they're going to carry on pushing and pushing and pushing.
Doesn't it puzzle
until
you that
sooner
that the
or
guy
later somebody breaks?
Who used to be a lobbyist for these interests suddenly is on the side of good? Or
actually, no.
Why?
Because I spent time with him.
And you think he's genuine?
I was so shocked by this.
Okay.
I thought Tom Wheeler was going to be the dingo that
you
John
don't.
Oliver
you don't
him.
Think that some star chamber brought him in and said, "Mr. Wheeler, you've been a faithful and loyal servant all these years, and we'd like to ask one more favor of you. Would you pretend to be on the side of net neutrality and privacy and all that is good and holy? Because we'd very much like people to think that the battle is raging here while we put rooms, secret rooms in the AT&T offices. And we put special devices in every ISP to record all your activities for the next 2 years while we secretly do all of this stuff." And everybody's saying, "Tom Wheeler, he's fighting for the good." And he gets, by the way, good for Tom Wheeler. He's now in the Wireless Hall of Fame, the Cable Hall of Fame, and the People's Hall of Fame. And he'll probably retire with a nice payout. But really, is what he's doing and what the FCC is doing changing this in one
well,
way?
I don't want to conflate what the FCC does and what the NSA does. I mean, those are two very, very different things. Tom Wheeler's argument about why he made the choices he did with the neutrality was that his customer is now the American public.
Right.
And so he's going to operate as if that
he works
is...
works for a customer, whoever
right.
that might be.
Well, that sounds very commercial, but I think he's actually a very moral person because he took withering fire from his former allies and employers for this.
I know.
And the best part was, again, Congress got involved and held a number of ridiculous hearings and got whacked around by Tom Wheeler, which I really enjoyed watching.
Yes.
But on the NSA side, it's a separate thing. I mean, I'm not mad at the NSA because of Tom Wheeler or vice versa. They're very, very different entities and responsibilities.
I don't know when I became this conspiracy-addled...
1947.
No, I'm not that guy. I'm the optimist. But I'm starting to listen to Bruce Sterling and you tell me how you feel.
Oh, no, but I mean, seriously, I've been... you go to Black Hat and before Snowden, if you suggested some of the things the government might be doing to government spokespeople, they would just bawl you out to your face.
The irony is we really knew all of that was happening. Yeah, we were just kind of put our jokes about
it. Yeah. Everyone
we were pretending,
suspected it, but nobody had the proof.
Yeah.
And you've got to have proof to
because
publish.
Because we didn't have proof, we could stick our head in the sand and say, oh, no, it can't be happening.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, Snowden really ruined it. He said, "Take your hands off yours, because I got something to tell you."
Yeah.
If you're watching this, do a Google search for room 641A.
It's still there, right?
I believe so. Just look that up.
The AT&T office.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Somebody said it's not been there in 20 years. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Little did you know.
Don't kid yourself. Great, great conversation. Thank you.
Of course.
Alex Wilhelm from, I don't know where the hell he's from.
Mattermark.com.
It's a great place. He actually, now you really cover investments and investors and money. And
startups and that sort of
thing. Yeah, it's great.
But I still care a lot about politics and privacy.
Which is why you're here.
That's why I'm here.
This is a great panel. The millennials on this half.
Yes.
By the way, anybody have a funeral you'd like to go to?
No.
Oh, it's been a busy first 3 months of the year. I've got to say, I never thought Lemmy was going to go, but,
so sad. Us old farts have really had to put up with a lot, haven't we?
Yeah.
That's Ian Thompson on the Register. Never thought Lemmy was going to go. Ian Thompson on the Register, Steve Kovac from TechInsider.io. More to come, lots more to come. But first, I want to talk about GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet with your coworkers and your clients right from your computer, even your smartphone, your tablet. Imagine holding a meeting in your garden using your iPad. You can see each other with an HD crystal clear video. You can hear each other. You can all be on the same page, sharing a document, collaborating on a document. This is the time of year. You know, spring is today. First day of spring. Get out there. Mm-hmm. Less time in the office. Spend a little more time watching, basketball. It's time to get work done and get back to your bracket. That's the new slogan. Easily collaborate with clients and colleagues from anywhere so you can be a meeting MVP. GoToMeeting.com. It's easy to try free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the button that says try it free. You'll be up and running literally in a minute. The nice thing is even your clients will be. They don't have to jump through hoops to see your presentation to join your meeting. They just click a link in their email and boom, you're there. Easiest way to conference. In fact, we know the conference calls is as long as you do a conference call, do it with GoToMeeting, and then if you want to turn on the cameras or you want to share a screen, it's there. It's all in there, and it's free for the next 30 days. GoToMeeting.com. GoToMeeting.com. We thank them so much for their support. Wow. This is interesting.
Got intense.
Who thought that I would be the cynic and you would be the pie-eyed optimist?
It does feel kind of strange.
I never expected that.
I put on someone else's skin and walked out backwards.
I never expected that. Do you guys have an Echo?
I do not.
Not anymore. I had to give mine back.
Oh.
I need to buy one.
You're going to buy a Dot, maybe?
I don't know, because I bought a Sonos only because it had Spotify.
I know.
And at the time, Echo didn't have Spotify. And then Echo got Spotify, and I was kicking myself.
See, the Dot you could hook up to your stereo. Yeah. The problem with the Sonos is the speaker's not so good. I worry about Sonos. I think that...
They're going through a big shift now.
They're firing people, and they say they're going to add voice, but... Yeah,
they can put Alexa inside Sonos. There's nothing stopping them from doing that.
I think Amazon should just buy them.
Oh, that's interesting.
That would be very interesting.
They must be in play with the financial...
Yeah, but aside from the Kindle, Amazon's hardware projects have always done...
Well, that's why you bring in the guys from Santa Barbara to do the thing.
Okay. I can see that. How much money would you pay for it?
Not much.
They have pretty high revenues.
Do they?
Yeah.
Why are they laying people off?
They're not. They're refocusing. It's not really...
The phrase pivot.
You bought that, didn't you? Yes. I did buy that. Because
we're not firing people. We're refocusing.
Look at the history of Sonos. They were so far ahead, they made a big bet 12 or 13 years ago and won. Mm-hmm. That streaming audio was going to be a thing, and we probably thought they were idiots. We're soliciting CDs back then.
Right.
They were totally right.
And now they're going all in on streaming. They're saying, share your library stuff. That's not really a big
deal. But now they realize, whoa, there's this burgeoning trend of the Alexas and the smart assistants in the home. They don't have anything there, and they realize we need to double down, refocus, move people around where we need to move them, and get into the space because it's the next big thing. And I bet next year we start seeing Sonos's with Alexa built in or something very similar.
Okay, so now that Leo...
That's my positive side.
Leo has put me on the old fart side of the table. Yeah. I've got to ask. I know people who've tried Echoes. I know people who've tried a bunch of these different devices. Is it really that good that you're willing to have that amount, an expensive bit of hardware, always listening in your house, that you wouldn't rather just go to a laptop and press play?
Yeah, it's really cool to come home and say, Alexa, play me some Weezer, or Alexa, play me some...
You could pick a better band than that.
Alexa, play some Nickelback.
Yeah. No, but it's really cool.
Oh,
it's
by the way, we've now started a Weezer stream in half of our audience, and the other half's listening to Nickelback.
Yeah,
so.
There we go.
We're not very nice, I don't think.
That's mean.
What do people
like? And there's other things, because you can say, Alexa, set a timer. I'm sorry, I keep saying Alexa. Echo, set a timer.
Two finger strokes. It's
no,
really
no.
Tough.
You are sounding like an old fart now.
Yeah, well, I'm on his team. Should we change chairs?
You've always been an old fart.
But when you
way
try
before
it,
your
you
time.
Don't get it until you try it. And I said this. I was on Tech News Tonight the other night, and I said the exact same thing. But when I got rid of mine to send it back, my review,
you
it
missed
back,
it.
I missed it.
You
it
missed
was,
her.
Really?
I didn't miss it. It was very strange to come home and not like start playing music and say, you know, do this for me. And it was interesting. It was like I lost.
See, I love Google Voice Search. I think that's a great application. Yeah. But the idea of just having this hardware in my house, constantly listening to the to conversations around the house, and I've got a bad sense of humor in some respects. Mm-hmm. So things I
it'll
don't
tell
want
you bad to, jokes, by the way.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, let me guess.
Echo, tell me a joke. It'll tell you a joke.
Here's a bad joke. You know, you can get the next. You can say
Echo, tell me an Obama joke. Tell me a Clinton joke. They have all these. You know, what's interesting is it's very easy to write additional skills for the Alexa, so, the Amazon. So they're exploding. And that's one of the problems actually they're having is there's so many skills. It's hard to keep track of all the things it can do.
Well, I mean, when Siri came out, we all found the Easter eggs in Siri. And it was a lot of fun. Like, tell me a joke.
Right.
Will you date me?
Right.
Do you love me? And that was fun for about a weekend. Mm-hmm. And then I haven't found a new one yet because I don't use Siri because it doesn't work. And so I'm skeptical of this.
So what's funny is it's not as good as be honest, it's not as good as Google or Siri, but it's your house listening.
Interesting.
And that's sort of a cultural difference that I think is a very big difference, that you're not talking into something or manipulating something. You're just standing there doing what you're doing, and you say to your house, how much gas is in the car? And it tells you.
It's very passive, and it's easier than looking at a screen.
The interaction is
so it's kind of an ambient intelligence layer
in
your domicile.
Well, and it's a dumb intelligence layer, but you know, I can see the day when it's Scarlett Johansson's voice, and it's more interactive, and it does more, and it's just the beginning, again, of something pretty amazing.
Is this like the start of a house OS, if you will?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, definitely.
Now I understand better what we're talking about. Okay, cool.
That's exactly, and we were talking about this before when I was on Twit a couple of days ago.
That's got to be the end game for Amazon.
They screwed up with the Fire Phone. It was a total flop. They missed smartphones. So they're like, we need to find a platform that we can just dominate. And they stumbled on this. And it's
and,
super
oh, by the way, it helps you buy stuff on Amazon.
Right. Yeah.
Really, really good.
But you don't have a button to use it.
Yeah,
you don't
what, have to what use happened to those little buttons?
The dash buttons?
They still do
it. Still around?
Yeah, they're still there.
So they're building.
But it's better than a dash button. So I could have a dash button to buy toilet paper, which I do. Or I can say, Echo, buy some more toilet paper. And I say, oh, you last bought a 12-pack of Cottonelle. Would you like me to reorder that? And I say, yes. And it says, what's your code? Because you have to give a PIN code. And you give it the code. And it's ordered. And it arrives in 2 days. Talk about friction-free. That's a pretty amazing experience.
Or you get the Brita filter that automatically knows when it's time.
Come on.
How long before that's gamed in the same way the printer ink cartridges have been gamed over
the years? Well, it didn't take long for my 13-year-old to figure out that every time he pressed the button, toilet paper arrived in 2 days. And we went through a period of several weeks where we got toilet paper every other day. But then...
That's a pretty good troll, actually.
Then I hid the dash button.
That's the thing. You have to live there because it only orders it at once until it arrives, and then it resets. So as soon as it arrives, you can order again. That's why he would go every couple of days, push the button.
That's a dedication to the joke.
I know, it's awesome.
Is that like...
I couldn't get mad.
Toilet papering people's houses is a thing over
here. It's the new kind of TP. Oh, my God, you're right. Oh, my God, you're right. Amazon is enabling... It's a prank company. I'm sad to see that Google is putting its robots up for sale. The scary robots, Boston
the military
Dynamics.
Robots.
Yeah.
Have you seen the video when they knock it over?
I feel bad for the robot.
I feel bad for humans once the robots.
This is what they're going
to
use to.
I know
recruit.
You're just kind of like the robots lying there on the ground. I will get my.
It's
going to
be on Robot Tube. You know it is.
Robot Tube.
Robot Tubes. They'll all be saying, "Get the humans. You see what they did to us."
I mean, on one level, Boston Dynamics did lose the big dog contract, and that's not going to happen for.
They lost the big dog contract?
It was too loud.
It was too loud.
Because it was electric. It was a gas motor.
It's the one with four legs.
Yeah.
It's a mutated poodle.
Yeah. But the one that looks like a person is just so creepy.
That's still being used in the DARPA Grand Robotics Challenge, and that could actually have some use, but that's all fair ways down the line. Big dog, it was one of those great concepts. It's like, our men can just go out with just their kit and this robot will follow it. And you've got to fire up a petrol engine, which makes a scooter that sounds.
Not that men haven't fired up petrol engines to go out into the wild.
No, but when you're going out and trying to be stealthy and creep behind enemy lines, it's not a good idea to have a slow, clumsy quadruped.
I think this is
a
scary as heck combat robot, though, right?
Oh, yeah, I would totally like to have that on my team. But
it's relentless. But don't do that, dog!
I can understand the point they're making about
selling this company because they're mean.
Well, I think One thing that Bloomberg reported, I think, shortly after the report came out that they're up for sale, is that this video went viral, and everyone's like, look at these creepy robots Google's building, and they don't want that PR mess.
I think that's the
real reason. That we're building military robots that can crawl everywhere, and they look like humans.
It was a problem when they bought them, and they were quick to say, oh, no, 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 the military contract is over, we're going to run out.
And it didn't help them, because the first I.O. conference after they made the buy, there were people standing up in the keynote, having infiltrated the conference,
standing
up with banners at the keynote, go, you're building murder machines.
Oh, come on.
We're really not, but, you know, it's just, when is rational?
The other rationale behind selling Boston Dynamics is that it has no marketable products for a long time. Right. And now that Ruth is the CFO of Google and certain costs are being curtailed, I'm not shocked to see a revenue-free division be sold off. And tech is awesome. We all agree the tech is really cool. But if there's no revenue, Google's like, okay, well. Yeah.
I'm just
and keep in mind, Andy Rubin left, and he was in charge of this whole robotics division.
I know. He was recruited to bring all these 15 companies together.
Exactly.
And when he walked, it's kind of like.
So they were kind of left like, okay, so what do we do now?
This is so Google. Where they just, they are, can a company be ADD? They are the most ADD
of Motorola, sell it a few years later.
It's sad because you want to go all in on some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. You want to say, I believe in this, and then they lose interest.
And then he knocks it over. Watch this.
Oh, don't.
Oh, poor guy.
See? And everyone in the room has a gut feeling like, that's a jerk move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They will use that against us when the robot wars come.
I mean, it's,
and
I
the worst part is
far.
It gets hand, right back.
Yeah. The speed. That was the other unsettling thing. The speed
very
with
unsettling.
Which it got back up.
It's extraordinarily unsettling.
I just started thinking Sarah Connor and...
Actually, so Leo, on your point about ADD, it's kind of an interesting point for all major tech companies because they have to do everything.
Right.
I mean,
the
CD
market
Cortana,
expects
Google
them to
now.
Have... Well, what is the issue? That the market expects insane growth.
Insane growth and the platform effects are very important. So if you miss a platform, you may miss the next four or five platforms.
Good point.
So voice recognition is not that useful in Siri right now, but if Apple doesn't learn that tech, it can't put it into everything else it does down the road. So you end up with these really broad companies that can only exist with hundreds of billions of dollars of cash and capital. And so it's almost we're seeing like the creation of new like mass conglomerates inside of tech.
That's what Google is now.
Alphabet.
With Alphabet,
It's a pretty good encapsulation of this trend that I call the platform wars.
Have you been following the argument, you cover finance, that really the problem is a structural issue and due primarily to index funds.
Keep going.
So an index fund, as many of us know, is the smartest way to invest, right? Because it's very low fee, because it's just matching the performance of the stock market. The stock market tends to perform well over long terms.
Yep.
So it's an inexpensive way to invest money, but it's a passive way. A professor at Harvard Law, who I happen to know, Einar Lahai, wrote this article. He says it's a passive way to invest that rewards big companies, because these tend to be large cap stocks.
Yes. Mm.
And encourages a certain kind of performance from large companies that isn't necessarily in the best social economic interest.
So you're saying that economic patience by investors using index funds to purchase equities allows companies to make socially dubious choices because they're not under activist investor pressure?
Exactly.
Okay. Maybe.
That's been going on for a while, I think.
I want to see more data on that.
Well, he says it's getting worse.
I mean, it started with you had the corporate raiders in the 60s and 70s who divorced the idea of, who came up with the idea that the sole purpose for a company is to reward shareholders rather than to serve any other kind of to function in there. And maybe that's moving along faster, but there's always been an element of that in capitalism, surely.
Yeah.
Profit over
capitalism. Who is an antitrust
free
expert.
Markets are great for going for short-term profits. They're lousy at long-term planning.
Yeah.
But that's a function of just like capitalism in general, given competitive forces over time into profit sources.
Yeah.
But now we're getting pretty far in the weeds on the finance side.
This is we should read the articles by James Ledbetter in The New Yorker. Is passive investment actively hurting the economy? And I think it's an interesting case to be made.
Well, I mean,
here's why I bring it up with the tech angle, which is related to this issue. And I just am saying maybe it's a larger issue. What the market expects from tech companies is a larger issue. And I almost feel like, wouldn't it be great if we rewarded companies who said, look, we're only going to be around for 20 years. We're going to pick a technology. We're going to express it the best we can. We're going to ride its cycle, and then we'll go away. And for that reason, we don't have to be ADD. We don't have to be constantly seeking the next platform. We can just serve the platform. The reason I mention this is kind of my plan with Twit. I'm not trying to build a media company. I'm not casting around for the next big thing. I'm merely riding this particular wave to into the ground. Yeah. Well, and I think that, a lot of companies doing that might be a more efficient way to run an economy.
Maybe, but it's not the way it's worked out so far. I mean, Standard Oil was big for a reason, and it wasn't because they wanted to do six oil wells in one state.
But didn't you can say, well, we're going to beat the business cycle, but you never do, do you? Standard Oil didn't. Xerox didn't.
Apple beat one.
Polaroid didn't. Apple,
but
debatably,
it worked out in the end.
Almost as two different companies, really. But
true.
Okay, they went through one cycle. They got within 100 days of going out of business, and then they got a new cycle.
Okay, but think about Google. They're essentially a search company with experiments attached to it. Apple is an iPhone company with experiments attached to it. Microsoft has maybe two things, Office and Windows, with other stuff attached to it. I don't think using cash flows from functional products to build out new things and try new stuff is bad. And here's kind of one example of why. So Microsoft Research does what's called basic research, which means they do stuff in a non-commercial setting just to discover stuff. And that's a huge money pit, probably. But they pay for it with essentially software sales from other parts of the company. And cool stuff comes out of it. So when they wanted to build Kinect, they're like, can we track bones in motion? And the team was like, oh, yeah, we did that 5 years ago. Here it is.
Yeah.
And then Kinect came out of it.
But
that's cool.
Same with having walking encryption as well. That was a pure research project, which is doing very well. But the one thing I would say is that those kind of things are very good, but at the same time, for every company you've got, like Microsoft and Google doing that, you've got tech companies who are spending the bulk of their profits buying back their own shares to keep shareholders happy, to pay off these passive investors.
IBM,
classic case. And that doesn't produce anything. It produces returns for shareholders, and that's about it. If a company is willing to invest in research, fair play to them.
Right.
Take as an example the airline industry. Brings this up. 80% of all stocks in the airline industry are owned by a handful of investors. He argues institutional investors with an emphasis on index funds are playing an outside role in the sector, and that's why we have higher air prices for travelers, because of this kind of pressure, this ownership concentration, this pressure to return results for the stakeholders in the short term, not in the long term. And we're using, all of us using computers that are based on an operating system that was created by AT&T's Bell Labs, their Blue Sky Research Division.
Nice.
Right? And, you know, if it weren't for Unix, I think there's a lot of this that we're enjoying today that wouldn't exist. So I agree Blue Sky R&D is not a bad thing. But is it best done by these big companies? And look at Google, where they don't give robotics time to mature, and they have to move quickly. That didn't work. What's next? That isn't really a very long-term point of view, and I don't think societally that's necessarily the best thing for R&D.
So I think that's a really interesting point, but I think that the obvious but kind of lame answer is maybe it's not possible any other way. And maybe there isn't a second option. I mean, if you could design these kind of single rocket ship companies that you outlined and did one thing,
right?
Maybe that just wouldn't work out, because companies tend to not do that.
They're never going to act that way.
Yeah, because you're acting in a suicidal run. It's like a game studio.
Right.
Game studio will do Age of Empires and then die.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Zynga's entire process has been one whole level of
peak. It's not that they didn't want to. It's not that they wanted to. They wanted to have Age of Empires 2, 3, 4, 5, and whatever's next, but I think there's a natural business cycle for a lot of businesses that you cannot get around. It's just the way it is.
Also, we don't say Zynga out loud anymore. That's been banned.
Zynga? Can we say Buzzinga?
You've got to turn around three times and spit.
Mr. Sheldon Cooper? No, you cannot.
Let's take a break. Lots more to talk about. Smart Panel. That's always the best on Twit. Ian Thompson from The Register, from Mattermark, Alex Wilhelm, and from TechInsider.io, Steve Kovac. We had a good week. I think next week's going to be a really interesting
week. I can't
wait. Yeah. But here's what you missed if you missed anything this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
It's been a long day here at the Silicon Valley Comic Con. Its first year ever, and actually was, is so excited. He actually stood in here for us to do this segment to show how dedicated he is to Comic Con. Hey, is there anything you want to add?
He's speechless.
Speechless.
Windows Weekly.
I've talked to numerous people now who say overnight, Microsoft upgraded my Windows 7 to Windows 10.
So they are saying there is not a bug. I think it's trickery. And I think even though they say, you know what, we're doing it for the good of the customer because it's a better operating system, more secure.
No,
I think you should have the option to choose.
There needs to be an option that says no.
TWiT Live Specials.
We're here in San Francisco at the Game Developer Conference, and I've managed to pick up a stray. That's right, folks, it's OMG Chad.
If there is one thing that I could pull away from GDC, it's that VR. It's so close. Everyone is behind it. Everyone is doing something. It seems like every single platform has something. All we need are games.
TWiT. Rack 'em up.
So Chad is currently floating through space, happening across planets, and then licking them out of existence.
That was disgusting. Did you see this? It's okay. A controller you lick.
Lick harder, Chad!
Do that? Does it taste like anything?
Yeah, it's sherbet. It's a nice, it's like a popsicle. That you replace it. It's not you lick somebody else's.
I was about to say, did they
buy those little things and you put it in the controller?
That's kill social gaming.
You know? Yeah. Whose idea was that? That was a terrible idea.
I suspect drugs were involved. There's no other explanation.
Where are they not involved in Silicon Valley, though?
Well, there is that. Yeah. But we sit here with our margaritas, but no.
These aren't drugs. That's alcohol.
Alcohol is definitely a drug.
Yeah.
Delicious drug.
An enjoyable social
drug. Delicious drug. What's ahead next week? Well, we talked a little bit about it, but let's see.
Thanks, Leo. It's going to be a big week for Apple. First up, you and I will be covering the big event tomorrow where we might see announcements about some small products, including a $600 9-inch iPad Pro and a new 4-inch phone. But even bigger Apple news might come on Tuesday, March 22nd, when Apple gets its day in court. The hearing before Magistrate Judge Sherry Pim of the Federal District Court for the Central District of California is scheduled for 1 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday. And Jason Howell and I will be sure to bring you all the details on that on Tech News Today. On the lighter end of tech news, Silicon Valley Comic Con is going on right now, and Padre and Patrick Delahunty are there. Look for some news next week about what came out of Steve Wozniak's inaugural conference. Next week is also Y Combinator Demo Day, when a bunch of eager startups try to show off why they're worthy of your money, judging by the recent funding apocalypse that seems to be going on in Silicon Valley these days, and the fact that there were no startup darlings coming out of South by Southwest Interactive last week. We are really curious how this will play out. Look for this news and a whole lot more with Jason Howell and myself on Tech News Today every day at 4 p.m. Pacific. Back to you, Leo.
I picked a bad week to go on vacation. This is going to be a very exciting news week. I'll be here through MacBreak Weekly, but then taking the rest of the week off. I'll be back on Saturday for the shows, though. Make sure you watch TNT Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And remember, we are now on summertime, even though not all of you are. So we have moved. We sprung forward an hour.
Yeah.
Last week.
I know. The UK has still got another week or so
it's
to
very
go
confusing.
On this.
Yeah. Our show brought to you today by Gazelle. Now, anytime there's a new iPhone or an iPad ready to come out, I urge you to go right now to gazelle.com and get a quote on your old one. Even if you don't know if you're going to get the new phone or the new tablet, because I can tell you one thing that doesn't take a soothsayer to figure out. Your device, any device, is not getting more valuable. Every day it goes down in value. So get the quote now. Here's a beauty part. It's all in your benefit because Gazelle's locked in now for 30 days on that price. You're not. You don't have to. But you at least you have the price. And they guarantee they will pay you at least that much for your old iPad, iPhone, tablets from Samsung, Microsoft, Blackberries, lots of different devices. It's also, believe it or not, a good time to buy a used device. See, Gazelle is going to get a flood of older phones, you know, year-old iPhones, year-old iPads, and sell them, the very best of them, to you. So they have a variety of iPhones, including the 6S, the 6S Plus, iPads, Samsung Galaxy phones to choose from. In every case, the devices are fully inspected, a 30-point inspection, guaranteeing not only they're fully functional, but they're cosmetically good. There's no big scratches or anything. There is, of course, a 30-day return policy. You don't extend your carrier contract, but they do work in all the major carriers. Go to gazelle.com, see what your old devices work, and then check at worth, and then check out the selection of certified pre-owned devices today. If you're buying, they have offer financing on all devices from a firm. You can do this in checkout. So you just provide some basic information. Instant approval is available. You can pay in 3, 6, or 12 months through a bank transfer, a check, a debit card. Just select financing with a firm at checkout. And they also now offer an aftermarket 12-month warranty for cell phones and iPads powered by Assurance Solutions. That covers water damage, cracked screens, hardware defects. This is really nice. You don't have to, but you can. Help is available, too, 24-7, in case you want to process a claim and return your device. They'll help you do that. Gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Give new life to used electronics. Trade them in for cash. Buy certified pre-owned. Pay it forward. It's the best way to recycle. Gazelle.com. You saw in that little promo that one of the things we talked about this week, and we finally got confirmation, is that Microsoft is, kind of hard to believe, upgrading people who have Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 automatically to Windows 10 without their permission.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mary Jo Foley called Microsoft and said, is this a bug? I thought it was a bug.
An accident? Like an oops?
Yeah. At first I thought, oh, it's not happening. People are clicking OK. Then I heard from enough people who said, no, it happened. Mary Jo called Microsoft. They said, no, it's not a bug. We told you that we were going to do that.
They did?
What?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
You missed the meeting. They didn't get the memo. They said, we are moving the Windows 10 upgrade into recommended updates in the Windows Update.
So that's why in Windows Update you had to go from doing automatic updates to manually picked updates.
Well, you didn't have to, and most people didn't.
Yeah, this is why.
So, and the default setting is to install critical updates and recommended updates. Yeah. So a great many. Now, the fix is, by the way, to immediately go to Windows Update. Continue to take critical updates. I think you have to do that. But you might want to turn off automatic recommended updates. What will happen is if you have recommended updates, and most of them, you know, it says update in the middle of the night, 3 a.m., you'll wake up and you will be faced with a EULA saying, here's the license agreement for Windows 10. And if you say okay, you have Windows 10 because it's already been installed. You only see the EULA after the install.
If you decline,
then it has to uninstall Windows 10.
Yeah.
So you get penalized.
Yeah. So if you're on tight data caps, basically that's
3 gigs down the tubes. And the rollback is not 100%. So I'm shocked really that Microsoft would do this.
People are going to be very mad. Microsoft looks bad. But they have to hit this 1 billion unit or device.
Is this the market again?
Basically, yeah.
Jeez Louise. Mm.
You sound like a socialist today, Leo.
I'm feeling the burn.
I got Bernie over here.
So Windows 10 was on 200 million devices January 4th, 2016. So 20% of the way to the 1 billion market.
That includes, though, Xboxes and a bunch of other devices as well.
Devices.
Yes.
It's a very broad term for a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah, because really, let's face it, you're not running Microsoft Office on your Xbox One.
Well, if you are, you're a moron. Stop doing that. like, just don't.
But the universal Windows platform is designed to make developers happy with a broader base.
Yes. Which is a smart move, actually. Yeah. I like it.
I'm still so skeptical of that.
Really?
It only makes sense for app-level things. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what app you would want to run on both your Xbox One and your Windows PC.
Exactly.
Skype.
No, that's my point.
Skype. Exactly. Sure. Slack.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Do you want to really chat on your Xbox One in Slack?
If I have Alexa, so I can talk to it.
Yeah, if you could talk to it.
Or Cortana. Sorry, Microsoft fans. Whatever.
I've never bought this argument. They've said for years that this universal platform is going to suddenly spur a ton of innovation in the mobile app store. I don't think Snapchat is suddenly going to decide to make a Windows 10 app. I don't think Instagram
would be awesome if they did.
It would be
true.
Great.
Also, it works great for games. Right? For games, it makes a lot of
games,
sense.
Games, it's great.
And games is the single biggest app.
But remember, some gaming developers are not thrilled about this. We're talking about Epic Games.
Sure.
Close Garden. Yeah.
Because he says, well, I want to be able to. Now, Microsoft, by the way, made everybody feel better. But he said, I don't want to have to sell in the Microsoft store. That really limits what I can do if you can't download a game and install it from a website. Microsoft said, no. We're not going to force people to use the Universal Windows.
Right. They're not going to kill off Steam.
No, that could be crazy.
That would kill off PC gaming forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is what I don't get. Because Windows 10, okay, it's not the worst operating system in the world. We're not talking a Vista or an ME here.
No, it's not a bad upgrade. But you can see also it's completely legitimate that somebody may say, I don't want it.
Well, no, but they've been pushing it down people's throats right from the start. The annoying nag screen windows, changing the update recommendations.
Here's an example.
Download it anyway.
A critical update for Internet Explorer on Patch Tuesday this month. Not only installed security fixes for Internet Explorer, but installed a giant green banner saying, hey, wouldn't you like to go to Windows 10 now?
Yeah.
That is unconscionable because they're putting that in the critical update.
That's how you lose friends.
Yeah, quickly. Exactly. But it's not just that. They're putting adverts in the start bar.
Yeah.
That you've got to turn off if you actually...
GWX control panel, little public service, free and very good utility that will turn that off. And then also, you should turn off recommended updates. But you know, see... our audience, A, probably is upgraded to Windows 10 anyway, right? Yep. Or understands how to turn it off. This what this really hits is the vast majority of normal users who are going to say, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
They're not going to understand how to use Windows 10, its advantages, disadvantages. They think Windows is like the only OS in the world because they've used Windows 7 forever.
And lots of them have like 10-year-old printers that are going to stop working.
Yeah.
Scanners that are going to stop working. Software, funky-ass software for their knitting machines that are going to stop working. And they're not going to know what happened.
People still use printers?
Yes.
Wow. All right.
Shocking, though, that makes
sense. Not millennials.
Yeah.
This side of the table uses the printers.
I don't even know if we have a printer at Mattermark. I've never seen it.
Really?
Really?
No, we have, you know, we type on the internet. It works pretty well. And then you hit save, and it's in the cloud, and it stays there. It's pretty cool, actually.
See all this paper that I get?
Oh, yeah. I draw with my hands when I'm bored in meetings. But
physical media, Leo.
Physical media is dead.
Long live social media?
Yeah.
God, no.
But, I mean, a small point, though. I like Windows 10. Like, I like Cortana. I like Windows. I use it every day in my house. So the whine here is only that you should always have the choice, not that the OS is worse.
I agree. 100%.
If you look at their recent, I mean, much better than Vista, miles better than ME. Actually, I mean, you could make a case that it might be better than 7, but they're two very different operating systems.
It's better than 8.
In their design for.
No question it's better than 8.
Anything's better than 8.
If you're on Vista or 8, go to 10 now. Like, do not pass go.
But it's my right to decide, and I shouldn't be coerced into doing it or bullied into doing it.
I wonder whether this is a hangover from the Balmer days, where it's just like, you will do it, peon, and otherwise you will like it. But that doesn't seem to be like Satya Nadella's
method. It just really shocks me.
I don't understand why they're pissing off so many people, pushing it so hard.
Well, I mean, how many people are they really pissing off? Like, what's the rate by which they're doing this? Is this an early trial of response to a trial balloon in a way?
I am dreading the 8 a.m. phone call from my mother when the Windows 7 operating system she has learnt painfully to use for the last 2 years is gone. She's now stuck with Windows 10. And when that happens, I know I'm going to be spending an hour on tech support. And God love her, she gave me birth, but she's the most frustrating person to do.
Send Microsoft a bill for tech support time, like $100. Hey, like, I lost an hour, you give me $100.
So somebody in the chat room said, well, how is this Reverend Dan Gobra, who's obviously celebrating St. Patrick's Day for a few extra days, said, how is it different than Google forcing Picasa using people into using Google Photos? They're discontinuing Picasa.
Because you're talking the base operating system of a computer, the very UI that you have to deal with in day and out to do everything. Now, Picasa and Google, that wasn't a great move, but if you're going to change from Windows 7 to Windows 10, which is a big change in for people who aren't really that good with computers, you can't force that on people. They've got to choose it.
It breaks some sort of trust you had with the software and the user.
Unfortunately, with that kind of user, they're not going to go, right, well, I'm going to go and install and download Debian from now on. You know, they don't have the technical skills to do it, and they don't have the inclination to do it. So maybe Microsoft thinks they can get away with it that way, but it's just a really bad way to destroy trust.
But it's hundreds of millions of devices. It's not like 84 people in Pakistan. This is everyone around the world that runs Windows, which is most people.
You raise an interesting point, though. I mean, this has been going on for a couple of weeks, and I don't hear huge howls of protest. I mean, I hear them, and, you know, Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theroux, our Windows hosts, hear them. But it's not like you're reading this in the NBC Nightly News. No. Windows updates for millions.
Yeah.
What?
Nerds rejoice.
Yeah.
So maybe it isn't such a big deal. Maybe we're making a tempest in a teapot.
If it's NBC Nightly News, then pretty much any tech story is going to get knocked off by, look at this kitten with a bow around his head. Isn't it adorable? You know, I mean,
we don't hear it when a new iOS comes out or a new Android comes out. People are excited. Like, oh my God, iOS 9. I can't wait. For some reason.
Yeah. No. Really?
People. Yeah.
I hate iOS updates. I get them all the time.
It's like okay, you're the only one then.
Okay, that's
people
that's
don't complain when their phone updates. They get cool new stuff.
Oh, that's your point. Okay, I agree.
Although I have seen a number of pictures from, you know, menu boards and train stations and airports and other places. They're running Windows 7, and there's a big screen that says, "Your Windows 10 update is here."
Yeah,
and of course the software is dead in the water. No one knows when their train leaves. All right, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's just us geeks who are not thrilled.
I suspect it's just the geeks.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Our core audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, people were listening. Exactly. Just looking for other... Did you see Mark Zuckerberg's smog jog?
Oh, good grief.
It's not really a news story, but I guess Zuck is in China. He's in Beijing. And for reasons no one understands, on one of the most polluted days of the year, decided to jog through Tiananmen Square.
Without a mask.
Is there a security guard right behind him?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Those aren't just happy Facebook employees jogging with the boss?
Well, doesn't he have a thing where he jogs a mile or something every day?
Yeah. A mile?
Or he jogs some
I could jog a mile every day. That's not... Of course, and immediately the meme began. You see pictures of Mark jogging in front of the famous Tiananmen Square tanks in place of a protester. Mark, just anything he does is going to be food for internet fodder.
Well, fodder kind of. And I think a lot of people are kind of concerned about what he's planning with the Chinese government because he's desperate to get Facebook into China. And it's exactly... That is a very good one.
It's a nice Photoshop job, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean...
And he's smiling happily as he runs runs ahead of the tanks.
But he's running away from the tanks, though. It's a problem.
Well, that's good.
He's on the wrong side of history there.
Yeah. Run to the tanks, Mark.
Also, a clear day. On the day that he was jogging...
Yeah, the air was much worse then.
The pollution monitor on the U.S. consulate up there was apparently reporting, I think it was the equivalent there, just breathing in and out in Beijing that day was the equivalent to smoking about 20 cigarettes.
Oh.
Amazing.
That's the BuzzFeed headline. Mark Zuckerberg takes up smoking. The real question...
No, the BuzzFeed headline would be, you won't believe what Mark Zuckerberg has done next. Number 27 will amaze you.
What is Mark Zuckerberg inhaling these days? You won't believe. The funny thing is he posted it on Facebook, where, of course, normal Chinese people cannot post.
Mm.
And so there's some question, how is Mark posting this? Is he...
Probably has someone here who can do it.
Yeah.
Maybe he just emailed the picture to an employee. It's kind of rude. Post on Facebook when you're in China.
It's his company.
Yeah.
I think you get a free pass with your own stuff.
Okay. People do ask me. They say, I'm going to China and I want to post, I want to tweet and put on Facebook. Mm. And I say, well, there's ways, but I'm not sure it's a good idea. You know, you're their host country. You got to follow the rules of the host country, don't you?
Also be extra insecure. Back to our early point.
Yeah, can you imagine? I mean, you don't want to on the door of your hotel room at 2 in the morning.
It's not room service.
I have left a laptop in my locked hotel room in Shanghai where I went out for a meal. When I came back, it was switched on. And when that happens, you just got to basically burn the entire site from orbit.
That's a good
just
point. You can't use that laptop, can you?
No. Now? It's because you could put stuff on that.
Only bring burner laptops to China.
Exactly, yeah. Our editor's going up to China next month. He's already getting his burner laptop ready to go.
Wow. Well, I was in...
They don't talk about.
I went to China with my son in... By the way, loved it. What a great country. I just adore it. And I think it's a fascinating study. We had a wonderful time. But this was, I think, 2009. When I entered the country, you could still post to Facebook and Twitter. And by the time I left 2 weeks later, you couldn't. And it was they had the Uyghur uprising in the West, and I guess they decided. I remember we were watching in the hotel. We were watching international CNN, and all of a sudden it just goes dark. 3 minutes later, comes back. They did a story about the Uyghur uprising. And the censors just go, "Yeah, push that button."
Yeah,
really.
How many people do they have to have watching all the things all the time to make sure that they can pull that off each time?
I would guess like CNN sends them a text message saying, "Hey, that Uyghur story is coming up in 5 minutes."
They probably have to.
Mm. Hey,
they're doing business in the country. They've got to, right? If you want to be on the hotel channels, you got to play by the game. That's the problem with companies like Google and Facebook and Apple participating in the Chinese economy. It doesn't matter what we think about the rules, that's the rule. Just as we expect Apple to obey the law in the U.S., they got to obey the law in China.
A couple of distance got 10-year sentences after Yahoo gave up their emails to the Chinese police.
You can't, as a company, go into a country and act as a dissident yourself.
You just get kicked out very quickly.
Yeah.
Google said, well, okay, fine, we're not going to do business in China. Are they really not in China?
Well, they went to Hong Kong, where the rules are slightly different, but not that different.
Yeah, the Google.cn started.
I mean, if this comes back to what we're saying about the Apple FBI encryption case. If at the end of the day, Apple did develop its government OS, as it calls it, and for use by law enforcement, the Chinese would be perfectly within their rights to turn around and say,
absolutely,
right, give it to us. And if they said no, it could be like, interesting. You remember those factories you used to have? Yeah, terrible shame about those.
Donald Trump will win. It will come back to the United States.
Have you seen that video of Donald Trump saying China over and over and over again?
No.
It's all the time he said China in like a 2-month period. It's just China. China. It's China, so China. Amazingly good.
China, China, China.
I say that's of my overseas friends. That's the one question I get.
They ask
asked
you about that. Who is ends this guy?
Again,
and why?
Again, it's just like, are they serious? Are you sure this isn't a joke? Okay, April 1st is coming up. You know, it's,
I got somebody yelled at me because I follow Trump. I follow all the candidates on Facebook. Somebody yelled at me saying, "Why are you following Trump? Is it because you should be following Trump too? Everybody should be. This is you, this is an important election coming up, and you should follow all the candidates, right?"
I have to say,
don't you want to know what's going on?
I would be curious to go and see, to go to one of his rallies and see what it's like.
Unfortunately,
as a journalist, you wear.
Yeah,
I just punch you.
I was going to say, I've got a nasty feeling before this campaign's over, someone's going to get killed at one of his rallies.
But that was there's an article written about that, actually, that someone will eventually get beaten up enough. But you're a white male, you'll fit right in.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I mean, I suppose I could black up, but then I'd fit in even better.
He sounds like an Englishman.
Oh, just don't talk.
Shoot the Englishman.
Don't say words with your face.
Jeez, ma'am, I don't guess I can.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I'm screwed.
All right, I didn't mean to get into politics, but there you go. It's kind of hard not to when you're mentioning.
I really wanted to give the NSA to Trump. He would totally use it responsibly.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, that does bring home, does bring home the issue of why you want some
checks and balances.
Checks and balances, yeah. Because a overreaching government is always a possibility and always a risk.
And Obama, the current president, is a technocratic constitutional lawyer. And
he's still doing it.
Yeah, exactly. What if we had a crazy hairdo?
Yeah. Let's take a break, and we got the seeds and the stems, the stuff that settles to the bottom of the rundown when we come back. Yeah, actually, sometimes that's the best stuff. The shape.
Yeah.
It's sometimes the best stuff.
My mother's watching this, please.
No, that's the beauty of this. She has no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Maybe she does.
I know. Because I'm in even more trouble.
Would you like some tea and biscuits? Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com, a great place to make your next website. That's where I make my home, at leoville.com. We use it for our Inside Twit blog and so many other places because Squarespace has some real advantages. It's the best hosting ever. It never, never, never goes down. You can try. You just can't kill a Squarespace site because they've so tightly integrated the software, the content management system, with the serving that when your site gets hit by a lot of traffic, let's say you suddenly get the ultimate viral post we've all been hoping for, they just spin up more bandwidth, more servers, and boom, they handle it. Your site looks professionally designed regardless of your skill level. You don't have to be a web wonk to have a great-looking site. That's because they've used the best designers and the best engineers to create the templates you start with. You get all the benefits of that. And then customize to your heart's content. There are, if you want, hundreds of customizable settings, including fonts and colors, page configurations. Every Squarespace site looks different. It's all a unique little snowflake reflecting your particular sense of style and your needs, whether you're selling, maybe you're a band and you want to have your concert schedule on there. Yes, they've got a template for that. Sell your digital music on there or CDs even. They can do it all. Commerce on every single template. And one of the nice things is it's the only platform that lets you create and manage and brand your store in a beautiful way that matches your site. It's not some afterthought hanging off your website. They've got a basic plan and, if you're really getting into the e-commerce and advanced plan that really has features your growing business will appreciate. Mm-hmm. I love Squarespace. You will love Squarespace. And all I have to do is tell you, try it free right now. You can even import data from your old site. Use the promo code TWIT to get 10% off when you buy. Show your support for the show. Squarespace, you should. Squarespace.com. Rick Osterloh leaving Lenovo. That's kind of sad, but is it unexpected? He was the CEO at Motorola,
right,
who really, I think, kept Motorola on track through the Google acquisition, through the sale of Lenovo, kept the business in Chicago. Then Lenovo said, no, we're going to move Motorola to
He was the
China.
Only executive that really stayed throughout the whole thing. Google implanted Woodside, right?
Yeah, and Dennis Woodside had left as soon as the acquisition happened.
He was there,
Yeah.
And then Osterloh was
But
kind
I
of the,
loved
the
Rick.
There.
I thought Rick really got it.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether he's a Lenovo man, though. That's the thing.
Can you define a Lenovo man for me?
Someone who toes the party line and doesn't answer back when management do something stupid. He's a smart guy, and he would say, look, this is not the way to do it. This is the way to do it. I don't think that's what Lenovo is looking for in this company
that's
anymore.
That's quite a compliment, actually.
I almost feel like...
Sorry, I didn't mean it.
I almost feel like a Lenovo Motorola phone has, I mean, it's over for Motorola in a way. I don't.
They just want the brand. I mean, that's really all it is. It
gives them a foothold.
Yeah. They get, they get an IP bundle, they get the brand that allows them to sell in the West.
Yeah.
And that's really all there is to it.
But how much more weight does Motorola as a brand have for, say, consumer products?
These days.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like BlackBerry.
They invented the mobile phone.
Good job. 45 years ago.
Yeah.
I was negative, like, 18. Like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
You millennials, you got no regard for.
History.
Back in our day. Well, I say that. I was 3 when the first mobile phone was created. But even
really?
So,
I remember it. I wished I could have one, but they were too expensive.
Yeah, I mean, Motorola traditionally just bumbled along by, you know, they'd produce one really great handset and then things would fall off. And then they produce another great handset and things would fall off again. And Lenovo are all about getting manufacturing costs down, shifting good enough pieces of kit out there. So, yeah, I mean, it might work, it might not. It gives them the brand and the market and the distribution points in Europe. But they're coming on big in China, certainly.
A little disappointing that NPR has decided that you can't, if you're an NPR host, you can't promote NPR podcasts or the NPR One app on the show.
To keep the radio audience in place?
I don't know. Yes, it's a strategy tax, right?
Are they doing a Kodak?
They're afraid that people will stop listening to the radio. Part of the NPR is very political because it's not just the national organization. There's every NPR station. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the stations make their money on not the podcasts, but on the radio shows.
Ours is KQED, right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's stations like KQED are saying, well, don't promote the podcast. Who's going to listen to the radio? But this is something we went through in radio years ago, and any smart radio station immediately developed podcasts and internet streams and did everything they could to go digital before terrestrial just disappeared entirely.
Yeah.
Sad. That's strategy tax, where the existing business keeps the new business, the innovative business, from growing to protect it.
It's the old one about when you see a storm coming, you build windmills, not wind breaks. But yeah.
We see that in all traditional media that we see.
Yeah.
Print.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the obvious. Yeah. You know.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. I know. It's. Yes, everyone's just, oh, no, no, this internet fad won't really last. Yeah. And then.
But then, you know, what was promising, you see this week, I think it was, CNN announced that they're going to dump a ton of money into digital.
Good.
So that's great for them. So they're finally catching up. A lot of the TV networks are starting to catch up to this notion that, wow, digital is a real thing. BI just lost its executive editor to CNBC, and he's going to head up digital for CNBC. So they're... The traditional media companies are slowly realizing this is a thing.
JR. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
But it's where they're putting this money that worries me, because a lot of traditional media organizations are getting a digital media operation, but they're not putting the same effort into the news side of it. It's all about sponsored content and native advertising, which is a nice way of saying, let's screw over our readers. So, I mean, I'm not sure I trust some of these larger media companies to actually do a good job by the readers. I think it's more going to be, here's something which looks like an article we've written, and if you look very closely at the bottom, it says sponsored by XYZ company. But, I mean, The Atlantic's got a division now doing this.
Yeah, and all the big media companies. Yeah.
Atlantic's doing a good job, I thought.
Didn't they do the article on Scientology?
Yes,
that was
a few years ago. Yeah.
You recall this though?
Yeah.
Yeah, they put the advertorial for Scientology, and then everyone immediately lost their minds and took it down.
But they realized it was a terrible idea, and they haven't, to I think their credit, done any native content since.
I don't know, but it hasn't been bad enough to cause a ripple in the media world.
That was a terrible one. Thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They did lose some good people, like Kevin Roos to Fusion. But I think the Atlantic, Alexis Madrigal, but I think the Atlantic has a really, to me, my mind still is very relevant, and I read a lot of its digital content. They don't make any money off of me.
I just read their print edition recently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's still around, huh?
No, I just actually bought the magazine in the airport, and I read it.
How was that for you?
It was. I always do that.
Yeah.
What?
I'm a subscriber to the New Yorker, the paper edition.
Yeah. I still read the New Yorker, but I got to do it digital. I can't.
I don't know. It's
don't you feel guilty? There's this pile of New Yorkers you haven't read.
It makes you look smart when people come over there. They can see that pile.
Just throw
of New Yorkers
it around.
No, basically, I read them. We read them. We recycle them. It's end of day.
Oh, that's nice.
It's
speaking of high culture. Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah.
Did we mention that yet?
Oh, we almost got away.
Bang.
That's all. I was going to say Hulk Hogan. So I won't. But no, you know, I'm going to put you guys on the spot here, because. So Nick Denton, who runs Gawker, And Gawker has some titles that are quite respectable. Gizmodo, Jalopnik.
Mm-hmm. Jezebel.
Jezebel.
Deadspin's great.
Deadspin's I love Deadspace. Deadspin and Gizmodo. But they also have Gawker, and for a little while they had Valleywag, Gossip Rags.
Well, Valleywag's been up and down like the Assyrian Empire. One day it was in, one day it was out.
Yeah, but you know, when they killed Valleywag, they just rolled all the content into Gawker, so it didn't really change anything.
Well, back when Natasha and Sam Biddle, it was a very active publication. Now it's the occasional pot shot from Biddle at somebody doesn't like.
Yeah.
It did actually break some stories I mean, in his day.
And we make fun of you all the time, so you kind of read about yourself in a very negative light, which I enjoyed.
So, Hulk Hogan had a sex tape, I guess. Bubba the Love Sponge recorded it.
How did William S. Burroughs not write this?
Bubba the Love Sponge is a shock jock. I guess Hulk was having an affair with Bubba's wife.
Well,
Missy the Love Sponge.
But it was all coordinated.
Yeah.
Was
he? Took the video. Bubba took the video of this guy shacking
so
his,
he was
his
there,
wife.
But I don't know, maybe he was like at a nanny cam in there.
And then tried to market it around various publications.
And Gawker didn't hesitate to buy it and run it.
Yeah.
Now, Hulk Hogan is a public figure. And traditionally, if you're a public figure, what is the law?
It has to be true. Yeah. That's the number one thing.
Well, it's a tape. It's obviously
right,
not a
exactly.
lie.
So the number one barrier you have to cross is
so libel means that you have to say something untrue with intent.
Intent, correct.
So it's not libel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was intent, but intent to, you know, get some hits. But it was not untrue.
It's a violent.
Does anything go? Like, can
in
you?
In this case. No, but for me...
No love lost for me. Gawker has twice, not once, but twice, written really scurrilous stuff about me that I would sue them over if I weren't smarter than Hulk Hogan.
And I think they've gotten...
Although, if he gets $115 million,
right. You now lose
now, it. Now you might want to...
He won't see a penny, I don't think.
No.
We'll see.
But it depends on your definition of public figure. Are you a public figure? Kind of toes a line.
Sam Biddle thinks so.
I think you are.
I think I am, and so as a result,
the CFO of Condé Nast.
Now that was unconscionable.
Now is he a public figure?
That's a lawsuit they should have.
But you
to
see,
fight.
I think this comes down to what the
they
public
outed him.
You can be a public figure, and that gives you maybe slightly less rights to privacy, but absolutely no rights to hypocrisy. Now, if Hulk Hogan had been going out and campaigning for traditional marriage and for divorcees to be stoned in the streets, this would be wide open. But
the guy's
never made a big thing about his sex life, so why should the fact he's knocking off his best friend's wife?
No, he did make a big fact about it.
He did? Well,
yeah, he was bragging about it, Hulk Hogan.
Didn't circulate the video.
Well, he didn't circulate the video, but he talked about the
so
fact that
Gawker
the video
wanted
public.
This lawsuit.
Yeah, in public, to TMZ. Yeah.
Oh, well, in that case, screw him.
Gawker wanted this lawsuit to happen in New York, where they're headquartered. It happened in Florida, around the corner from Hulk's house. The jury was very sympathetic. Those New York guys are not well loved, but Hulk
probably
Hogan
Trump
is.
Voters too.
Of course, this happened in Florida. It's perfect.
Come on. So they awarded him more than he was asking.
And made Denton and his mate personally liable for a large chunk of it.
$115 million, $55 for economic injuries,
$60
for emotional distress. Yes, it's not over.
But there's not enough money available from Nick or Gawker to actually pay this. So they may get, like, you know, a guarantee.
In order to appeal this, they have to file a bond.
Of 50, right?
$50 million.
Which they don't have either. Mm-hmm. So they want to appeal, and you know what? They would win on appeal because the federal court would say, no, come on, it's the First Amendment. You don't have any protection, and as reprehensible as it is, that's the way it is in this country.
But Gawker's learned a valuable lesson between this, the Condé Nast CFO, all the turmoil they went through last summer. They realize it's time to grow up.
And they stopped doing gossip.
I don't understand why their lawyers allowed some of these people on the stand. When they got the guy on the stand, it's just like, so, would you consider publishing a sex video of a child? It's like, well, it depends how old they are. So, pick a figure. It's like
funny.
Four.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you don't make jokes like that in front of a jury, real judge. You really just don't do it.
Or on Slack, or in private. Now, or you're in your own head. Just don't do it.
The argument I've heard is that Nick comes from Britain, where there's a different kind of cultural rule about this kind of stuff. Libel laws are different, of course.
I can't speak for my people, but yes.
Would you speak for your people?
The libel laws are massively different. Libel is a really stupid case in English case law, where if you accuse somebody of libel, they have to prove that they didn't libel you in a way that caused you harm. So the burden of proof...
Yeah. Ah, well, there's definite harm here, right?
Yeah, so the burden of proof is always... is switched round from the accuser to the accused. At the same time, we've always taken the view that if you're a public figure, you have a more limited amount of privacy,
right?
Particularly if you use your public image to push particular products and services. Right. So it's...
I've been told that Denton kind of comes from this Tatler tradition of, yeah, you know, anything goes. I mean,
there's a long tradition, certainly in the British tabloid media, of publish and be damned. And, yeah, we've got lawyers for sorting out the payment schedule afterwards. So, you know,
Denton, you know, coming to the United States, maybe brought that tradition to the U.S.
Could be. I mean, it's, I know
he's made. I mean, they've done quite well. You know, Valleywag, I'm sure, did well. I mean, Gawker's done well.
Yeah, because they were prepared to write stories that other people's weren't.
And sometimes with some merit, which is great.
Yeah, which is good. But occasionally, yeah, they, you know, this turns around and bites you on the ass.
Is this a First Amendment case? Is there really? I mean, isn't the federal court just going to overturn this?
I think they'll win in the appeal. Yeah. I mean,
that's what everyone's saying that I've heard at least.
Yeah,
I can't see how it would stand on the particularly as large chunks of the evidence weren't allowed to be given to the jury.
Well, and also you don't want the courts to decide what can be printed and what can't be printed.
You definitely don't want that.
No.
So as reprehensible as Gawker is, as much as I'm rooting for them to die,
holding your nose and supporting
you, have to hold your nose and support it.
Mm.
Kind of sad.
It is. But you know, the difficult arguments when it comes to privacy and free speech are the ones that make the best cases,
right?
You know, it's like everyone, I'm sure, with half a brain cell, wishes the Westboro Baptist Church disappeared into a smoking hole on the ground.
But they have the
right. They have
to
the right to say and protest what they say.
Yep.
It's one of those things.
And for me to defend Gawker is just
the irony is stunning.
The irony.
So that's saying a lot right here where you stand.
Yeah, but you have to, because I don't want to be the next one that a court comes along and says, "Oh, by the way, you can't say anything about Microsoft."
Yeah.
You know?
Too late. But anything more about Microsoft?
It wouldn't serve anybody. It wouldn't serve society. We need to have a free, untrammeled press, as reprehensible as it sometimes can be.
Yeah, especially if corporate interests could therefore bully publications into more positive coverage and so forth. It's not just the government we're talking about.
They do try that, though, don't they?
They do try.
Oh, yeah.
But we haven't had a very good precedent and case law in place.
No.
Thank heavens.
One difference I have noticed between the press over here and the press over back in the UK is when a company tries that in the UK, all journalists on other publications will circle the wagons and go after them with all guns blazing. Whereas over here, like, there doesn't seem to be that sense of brotherhood, if you like.
There is a healthy. It's because Gawker is Gawker, and they are such a polarizing publication. And I've seen journalists who are very smart and very liberal and well respected who are totally want Gawker to lose.
Hell
this.
With them!
And I think it kind of is where Leo's coming from. They're just trash.
They burned so many bridges.
How can you feel bad for them?
And
you
almost
want to see them die.
I mean. You don't want courts to decide what could be printed, but at the same time, a company like Gawker does damage to good journalism, right? There's some responsibility on the part of the journalists to do a good thing, right?
Yeah,
isn't there?
Being tasteless shouldn't be illegal.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be illegal, but. You should have good taste.
I can say don't be a jerk, but I can't ban you from being a jerk.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
think that's what people are saying about Gawker. Well, they were jerks. They're jerks. Don't be a jerk. It's bad for everybody. But
if you
have the right to be a jerk. I'm sorry to say.
At the end of the day, whenever you hear someone say, it's my First Amendment right to say that, so it's like, well, no, it's the First Amendment right that the government doesn't have the ability to bar you from saying that.
Right.
I can still think you're a wanker for saying it, but, that's the way
it goes. You can't force me to like it.
It's like internet commenters. Yeah. Oh, you deleted my comment. You're taking away my First Amendment right.
You're not
free to write on your own blog whatever you want about me.
Yeah. And I'm free to not read any of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Folks, we've come to the end of another fabulous edition. I want to thank you all so much for being here. Alex Wilhelm, Mattermark.com.
There we go. Got it right.
What else do you want to plug?
Nothing, really.
Good. That saves time.
Here for you.
from TechInsider.io, Steve Kovac. Anything else you'd like? What are you out here for? Because you're in New York, right?
Yeah, I'm here for the Apple event tomorrow and then turn around and go right back home. But yeah, so you can follow Tech Insider tomorrow for all the Apple news or just my personal Twitter at Steve Kovac.
Good. And we'll be following with great interest as we broadcast. What I do is we anchor the stream. We run the Apple stream probably illegally, and then I shouldn't say that. It's not illegal. It's commentary. Right?
No, you're fine.
My free speech right. We run the Apple stream, and then Megan Maroney and I and Alex Lindsay will give your analysis and commentary on that. Of course, if you want to watch the Apple stream, you can do that without commentary, mm-hmm. or you can watch our commentary. That's 10 a.m. tomorrow, Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1700 UTC. I've heard people say, in fact, who is it, 9 to 5 Mac or somebody has a spoiler-free zone so that there apparently are people who are now treating this like Game of Thrones.
Oh, my God.
So I'm at work. Don't tell me. I don't want to know what Apple announced. I want to go home and watch it as if it's live.
I want to die.
That's sad.
I don't want to live anymore.
Those keynotes are so boring, though. Why would you want it?
I know. Oh,
it's God. One big commercial.
No spoilers. Yeah. It's a commercial. Yeah.
It's a very long, drawn-out, pretentious commercial for things I'm not even going
to
buy.
There's no entertainment.
Usually with
it.
Apple staffers in the back ready to go,
it is right. a commercial.
And
the occasional journalist.
And then there's like dramatic pauses.
Yeah.
As they wait.
For him to say,
but you know what?
One more thing.
But you know what?
Channel dead Steve Jobs.
You watch, because Tim Cook will start talking about this event, and as soon as he finishes those comments, a lot of reporters will run from the room and file, because that is going to be a big national story. Not as much what Apple announces product-wise, but what Apple says about that court case.
Oh, that's going to be absolutely key. And that's not, I mean, it's not like Steve Jobs is giving the presentation. Tim Cook is... he's a great chief operating officer. He's very efficient. He knows where the company's going, but he doesn't have a lot of charisma. I mean, I don't know if you remember when he took over, The Onion ran a headline. Steve Jobs launched his new iPhone. Came on stage, showed the phone. This is a new phone. Isn't it great?
he's gotten a little more polished.
He has. But at the end of the day, he's not a showman in the way that Steve Jobs was.
No, in fact.
So I think, the FBI thing is... what he says and how he says it is going to be as interesting as anything Apple launches that day.
I agree. It's going to be huge. Here's Tim Cook. What's he doing?
Probably some dad jokes.
Yeah, he's hugging.
Oh, we should look out for Eddie Q's shirt tomorrow. That's
Eddie Q is getting out of control.
How many buttons is he? He's going to show his navel.
And he has the two-tone collar and the rolled-up cuffs and the big hair. Craig Federighi's got the big hair, too. He's the big hair guy. It seems like Microsoft's got a couple people like that that wear funny hats, or there's Joe Belfiore who has, like, a Beatles haircut.
Oh, good. Yeah. I mean,
is that kind of a thing?
It's a tech company thing?
They're trying to appear hip with the kids and the Snapchat.
Doug Copeland called it the hippie holdout. It's that one thing that you have, like the belly ring or the hair that shows you haven't
man bun.
Sold out to the man.
I'm surprised you don't have a man bun.
Are you kidding? It's the mullet for this generation. It's just horrible.
There's one guy who wears a fine man bun. His name is...
oh, no, he's not here, is he?
No. No, is the star of Hamilton, Miranda.
Lin-Manuel.
Now, he may have a man bun because he is Hamilton, and Hamilton would have had a man bun.
Also, he can do anything he wants, and I'll still love him.
I think that it's okay if he has a man bun, but you and me know. Ian Thompson from the Register, register.co.uk. Always love having you on. Always a pleasure.
Always
thank
good
you.
Fun. And you added tequila this time, which I thought this could go either very well or very badly.
I think it went
well.
We
managed the former, yeah.
I think the experiment was a success. I hope you all do, too. Thank you for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. 2200 UTC. The math gets hard after a couple of tequilas. 2200 UTC if you want to watch live. You can also be in studio. I had a great studio audience. Thank you all for being here.
Woo!
Yeah. We applaud you. All you got to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a nice chair out for you. If you can't be here in person or in spirit, you can always watch after the fact. We make on-demand audio and video of all of our shows available. Twit.tv, the website, or use your podcatcher or one of the Twit apps on every platform. And make sure you subscribe so you get every single show. Tomorrow, we will be doing the live coverage of the Apple event, but we also have a triangulation pre-recorded. We haven't aired yet, so I'm excited. If you're on the triangulation feed, you'll get my interview with Ian Bernstein, the creator of Sphero. He's the CTO, and he's going to talk about how they made that very good deal with Lucas to make the BB-8.
I'm gonna watch that.
It's a great
That's
story.
Cool. That's
it's
cool.
a great story. So that's tomorrow on Triangulation. Next week on Twit, Will Harris, Devendra Hardawar, Jason Snell. That'll be a lot of fun. I love doing this show. We've got great people on this show. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Another Twit.
This is amazing.
Bye-bye. Yeah.